The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
For me, footwork has been something that's got me out of trouble on more than one occasion on and off the pitch, so I'll go with that one.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
A new year is full of surprises, but one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services. So when postage goes up, your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com is like your own personal post office, wherever you are. You can even take care of orders on the go with the mobile app. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Schedule package pickups, automatically find the cheapest and fastest shipping options, and seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. There's even a supply store where you can stock up on mailing supplies, labels, even printers. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. All you need is a computer or phone and printer. Take a chunk out of your mailing and shipping costs this year with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com code PROGRAM.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
All right, it's 7:30 this Thursday morning. You're very welcome along to OTB AM. It's Ciarán Owen with you all the way through until 10 this morning. If you want to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you. 087-9180-180 is the WhatsApp number. You can leave a comment on the YouTube stream. We're up live every morning on YouTube. If you turn on your notifications and you subscribe to us on YouTube, then when we go live, we'll, you know, a little, not an annoying message, just like one that pops up that you can dismiss if you want, but it's a reminder and a single click away. Alternatively, you can listen to us as a radio show on the OTB Sports app or on the website. And again, sincere apologies to those of you who are listening on podcast on the iOS platform. We're having some issues on the iOS platform at the moment. One hint or tip is to set to download when you're on Wi-Fi, and that should work. It will take a little bit longer, but you should be able to listen uninterrupted to our podcasts if you download them on Apple. So hopefully that gets you through the day. And how are you this morning? Tell us. Yeah, you having a good time? Yeah? Breakfast good for you? Okay. Owen, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah.
Good breakfast? You have breakfast after the show?
Yeah, I've changed that up recently. I'm not sure if that's like wise or not, actually, because I slurp coffee like a madman for the first couple hours of the day, which I presume is getting the
that's
diet
the image everybody wants in the morning, Owen, slurping.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a pretty delightful image, to be honest. I'm sure that gets the I was going to say the juices flowing out. it gets the body going in the morning, but completely devoid of nutrition that maybe I should actually just be eating before the show. So
I don't know. Sometimes I'm just too hungry and had the breakfast before, and it's like, no, not a good idea. Because you just sit here bloated for the next 2 hours, going, oh, I should have waited.
That is the problem. That is the problem. Whereas if you don't have food, the caffeine goes straight to your head, and you're wired for the first couple of hours of the day. And
which then, is good.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
what
like
you need.
We are right now.
It's the only option. As I speak, with my eyes bloodshot and my cranium about to explode with all the caffeine going around my empty stomach.
You're a little bit croaky, Owen. I see you were out again last night. Jesus Christ.
See, the thing is, everything got cancelled earlier in the year.
The thing is, I just have a social life.
No,
none of you, the rest of you do.
It's like everything got cancelled early in the year and everything's just been pushed into 1 week, hasn't it? Or a couple of weeks.
And can you remember your name?
Just about, as I say, the caffeine is hitting hard.
And who were you at last night?
Last night now was the Olympia, first time back in the Olympus since things reopened. It could probably be the last time as well. For Those I Love was on last night, very closely aligned with Shelburne Football Club. Obviously, okay. He would have I suppose come to maybe the national consciousness with his Jules Holland performance last year or earlier this year, and then he was on the Tommy Tiernan show, wasn't he, earlier this year, telling his own story. Basically, this guy wrote an unbelievable album about grief and loss and suffering, and it is genuinely one of the best Irish albums ever released. And that's not hyperbole. It's when we get to the end of this decade, it will be in the top 3 to 5 easily of the best Irish albums of this decade. It is sensational. It is his debut album, and he'd never played in Dublin before until last night. So Everybody was together. It was like, right, we finally get to see this guy and see what he's like live. You know, in the Olympia, you've got the balconies. His mother was in the balcony. A very personal element to her being there. She's spoken about quite a bit in all the songs. So it was just this really deeply emotional night last night, which a lot of people did didn't expect, and his music is unbelievable. So yeah, it was pretty special. That is the last bit of fun we get before we inevitably get told we can't do this thing again next week. Then I'll take that.
You gave me a good send off. I think we could probably make you cry over the next 2 hours, could we?
You're tired
and emotional?
No, absolutely not. I'm actually, I will accept that I have sometimes been tired and emotional here, but today's not that day. 10:48 I got in my door last night.
No, it's not that. It's the grief when you start to meditate on that, and as one of the tracks loops in your head in the middle of the show, you suddenly stare off into space and start feeling sad about life. And then
maybe, I don't know.
So if you want to make Owen cry this morning, 087-9180
I'm looking through the running order. I mean, can Stephen Kenny's contract make me cry is the question. Do we have enough wholesome content here that can tug at the heartstrings?
Well, we're going to talk about two things at the top of the show here. Manchester United's 5-a-side. We now know the results yesterday, and we'll get to that in a moment. But I want to talk about Paddy Bonner first in the FAI, right? We'll talk about Man United and how amazing their training week has been, and how Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the man to take them forward, because a new team of heroes emerged yesterday, and we got the photographs and the result of the 5-a-side. Anyway, look, maybe you've seen this before. Maybe you know the results. Maybe if you're a dyed-in-the-wool Liverpool fan, you know the result of the 5-a-side and who wins the rondos. But we do know that, and we'll bring you those results a little bit later on. I know you're all waiting with bated breath for those. But safe pair of hands, Paddy Bonner. Out before the media yesterday. So, I don't know if people would have seen this, but Neil O'Riordan wrote a brilliant column earlier in the week about how sport is completely underfunded in this country, and he went back to figures that the FAI and UEFA had produced as a result of a survey that they'd done, and the value of sport is actually in the billions. The value of football is in the billions to the exchequer that they don't get any return on. So it's in mental health, it's in social... the glue that holds us all together. It's in education. It's in loads of other departments that you would kind of ascribe this value to football. And yesterday was the updated figures that they were pushing out there. And it's the beginning of football starting to assert itself as an important factor in our lives for all sorts of different reasons. And so that was what the announcement yesterday was supposed to be about. But it's completely overshadowed in the papers because... safe pair of hands, Paddy Bonner was out talking about the contract situation, and unfortunately it was safe pair of hands, Paddy circa 1990 quarter final pushing the ball back out to Schillaci, or worse, USA 94 when Wim Jonk is like, will I have a pot shot from 40 yards? Nah, keeper will save this. Sure, I'll do it anyway. Oh,
it's in the back of the net.
There was a bit of that. So you'd think that it's the easiest thing in the world is to come out and say Stephen Kenny's doing a great job, and the official response from the board is coming in a couple of weeks' time. We're all very happy with how things have gone, but obviously there's loads to be discussed, and I'd hate to, you know, I can't say anything just at the minute. But instead, it seems like there was just a bit of a you're all asking me questions about the contract. I can't be answering that.
Yeah, like this sort of... I think he's kind of created a little bit of a lightning rod here that didn't need to exist, to be honest, where...
It's a big story. All of a sudden, it's become a much bigger story today than a non-story.
Exactly. So, like, I mean, what we're reading in the papers and online is that he was asked if he felt Stephen Kenny was doing a good job. The question, I don't think, was...
what's your opinion?
Like? Yeah, exactly. And his response was, I'm not going to answer that because I know what you're getting to. I think we have to discuss that to review everything. So I'm not even going to go there because I know what you're getting at. So man on 12-person committee can't give opinion on whether manager is doing job, would suggest to me that this is going to be a relatively complicated process over the next little while. And anybody who thinks that there's going to be a new deal handed out to Stephen Kenny pretty easily next month or the end of this month maybe has got another thing coming, especially if they're expecting him to be at the helm until the end of the Euro 2024 campaign.
It just doesn't make any sense the way that they're approaching this, and the fact that they don't have a story ready to go. Like Paddy's saying, he's not the kingmaker. He's not the only one on the board who's going to have an opinion, because he's the football man on the board, even though he's the non-executive, or he's the non-football, non-FAI appointed one of the four non-FAI appointed directors. But look at the headlines, right? Bond the case, but no rush. Paddy warns over boss deal. So warning, negative. Holding tight is the Mail. FAI may go for a short-term Kenny contract. If I was Stephen Kenny, they'd come and say, oh, we'll give you a contract for two more games. I'd be like, nope. Find a new manager, lads. Off you go. Go on, find a new manager and see what happens. Let's see you get a sponsor with Noel King is the interim manager. How'd that work out for you the last time?
No disrespect to Noel King, obviously.
Bonner parries questions on Kenny's future is the Examiner headline. Bonner refuses to endorse Kenny but points to progress is the Irish Times headline. I'm not the kingmaker, Bonner. That was the headline on the Indo this morning on Dan McDonald's piece. Bonner, Kenny's fate not in my hands, says Paddy Bonner. And that, I don't know. I don't know. Do I have the star? Do I do the star? Paddy tight-lipped on Kenny. Right, it's like two steps forward and three steps backwards.
Would you actually do that if you were Stephen Kenny? Tell him to shove it if they came up.
Yeah, find somebody else. No, yeah. either we're getting married or we're not. But you can't be a little bit pregnant, and you're like, we're not sure. Okay, grand, you're not sure. Screw you. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Like, I mean, if they had a lucrative sponsor, if they were in rude health financially, they could go and say, you know what, we will get Neil Lennon, which, by the way, isn't actually a good idea. If they had all the money, that would be a bad idea.
Hey, well, let's see what happens when that happens.
But the fact is, I don't think they can even get to that point of making a bad decision with the successor, because it will just be like, I don't know, somebody already on the books or somebody who wouldn't be who wouldn't do a good job. I don't think it just doesn't make a whole pile of sense to offer him that short term deal and not just allow him to see through the Euro 2024 campaign, because it would suggest to me, if it's going to be a short term campaign, that the jury is still very much out on Stephen Kenny at FAI board level, and that these reports about there being a split over the last little while are very much on the money, that there really is.
I think it's fair for the public to say the jury is very much out on the new FAI board, and the whole sense that the new FAI is different from previous versions of the FAI. Granted, they're very different from the Delaney era FAI, but are they that different from the previous era, which allowed the Delaney era to prosper? Like, what is the story with this? Why are they so indecisive about one of the most important decisions in Irish sport? Why have they not been able to use the evidence of the full stadium, the away fans, the improved performance, back-to-back 3-0 away wins for the first time, is it in 20 years, in a qualifying campaign and competitive matches? Why have they not been able to come to the conclusion, the correct conclusion, that, yeah, we're just going to give you the next campaign, let's settle everything down and let's move on? Instead of this, yesterday was supposed to be a big day for the FAI to begin putting pressure and building the sense of football as an important social glue, and instead we're left reading all the back pages, which are kind of negative, using negative language about the Republic of Ireland manager and the FAI and the contract situation. It was a really straightforward slam dunk, but they couldn't do it, and so they still do not have their house in order, and you still query about, so Paddy won't say this, Paddy won't say what his opinion is, but loads of other of his colleagues appear to be telling people off the record and not putting their name to it what their view is on what the contract situation should be with Kenny. That's where this bullshit of the short contract and let's give another couple of months. What kind of planning is that? So somebody is saying that, and then publicly, Paddy could have said what he thought. He could have told us what he thought. There's one other thing I would just say about this. If Paddy is a contender for the Rude Doctor job, then he should say that as well. Like, if he's not a contender, that's great. I think it would actually be better for Irish football if at this stage Paddy was going to sit on the board and that would be his role in Irish football. But if he is going to be a contender for the Rude Doctor role, then he's actually a little bit compromised when it comes to all of this stuff. So, you know, there would just be a little bit of a conflict of interest if he is going to go for that job. If he's not going to go for that job, then I think that's totally fine. But it would be good if I don't know, maybe he was asked that, maybe it'll come out in the next couple of days, maybe it wasn't important, I don't know. But it would be good to know that. And one last thing, one more thing. He was asked about a report, and was it the Sunday Times, that he was a bit sceptical about Kenny, and he refused to, maybe it was a mistake, but it was a non-denial. It was like, oh, I'm not getting into that, that's just speculation. Nobody spoke to me, and because nobody spoke to me, I'm not going to get into it. Which, on one level, is fair enough, but the way that comes across is, was it right? Just because they didn't speak to you, does that mean that they didn't hear it through a third party who was actually relaying what you had thought in a private conversation? Or do you not think that? Because I'm left unclear about that. So, I don't know. You just feel like sometimes for trying to get out of their own way, they end up tripping up and we're left with doubt.
Yeah, and it's important you say they here, like, to come to Paddy Bonner's defence slightly here. It does seem that maybe he might have been given instructions that this was the approach yesterday, that don't commit to Stephen Kenny, don't commit to anything about that story about you being skeptical.
He's his own man
Kenny.
Too. He's a very experienced football administrator, you know, and I think he's a brilliant appointment to the board in many respects. Like, he's a bridge to the past that we really need. And I just think that there's a few missteps there yesterday that have left things more muddy than they were beforehand.
The point I'm trying to make, it just speaks of maybe a setup at the moment where what they want to say publicly is nothing. And it's like, let's just batten down the hatches for the
and
time
push
being.
This back until after the board meeting.
Yeah, that makes...
You know the dates. You know what the questions
are
going to
be. You know what you're
going to
be asked about.
Like, it's a very obvious thing. You know that everyone's going to say, what's the story with the contract? What's the story with the contract? Until they do the contract. And as soon as they do the contract, the next questions are going to be, what's the story with the sponsor, right? But, like, who cares, ultimately? That's going to be a not that big a deal. They'll get somebody. And there's loads of people interested, but who might be looking at this stuff going, who's the manager going to be if we're the sponsor? Mm. Who's going to show up?
Like, especially in an era of such uncertainty, like, can you say that, like, I mean, you're definitely going to have a full stadium for the next international window. You just can't say that for sure right now. But the one thing you can do is give yourself certainty on the manager's role. That is something that is in the FAI's control. They can't control a pandemic. They can't control what people are going to do outside, but they can control who their manager's going to be. And for commercial reasons, you would have thought that would have been a good move to try and provide that certainty.
Well, yeah, I do wonder if there's an element of... we'll talk about this a little bit later. What's your view out there this morning? 087-9180-180. That's the number you can WhatsApp us on. You can just leave a comment on the YouTube stream and we'll get to those. It'd be just great if we could stop talking about this. I would like to stop talking about this. I'd like more to be talking about the future of the Irish players and focusing on where they're going to end up, if they're going to end up, why they're not getting the first team in the various teams they're on, from that perspective. And then we've loads of Premier League stuff to talk about, including Manchester United's unbelievable five-a-side performance yesterday, which we'll come back to a little bit later on in the show. I know you're sitting with bated breath going, who won the five-a-side?
We did bury the lead, didn't we?
Which bit?
Manchester United.
Oh, yeah. But, like, look, I mean...
Keep them keen.
It's, you know, it's one of those 47 pictures on the internet that you have to click through to get the one that actually was the first one.
Right.
Why is that red cup under the toilet? Turns out if you Google that, Snopes.com have already... Snopes? How do you say it?
I actually don't know. I've never clicked through one of those ads ever.
You're joking me.
Never.
Oh, why? What willpower?
I know, but I mean...
No, I just am totally addicted to it. Why is that red cup under the toilet seat? Turns out it's bullshit. They don't even tell you. Because luckily, somebody actually did it. It's somebody's job to go through to the end of them and go, no, that's not a real thing. You shouldn't put a red cup under your toilet seat. 7:47 this morning. The coffee's hitting wild. Here's what's coming up. Did we do the coming up? We didn't. No. The beef is real is coming your way right now. Fiona Hay is going to talk to us about a very interesting weekend for Irish rugby last week and a very interesting week coming this week. The Ireland captain has stepped away. Sports Pages is at 8:25. Sports News, John Duggan is going to give us his thoughts on the FAI at 8:40. Ty Bracey is going to join us for the first time talking about Aston Villa to see how Stevie G gets on. See how now we're allowed to cover Aston Villa, all of a sudden Stevie G is there. I've been trying to do this for years, by the way. But anyway, Phil Egan at 9:10 and Joan Chelimo is going to talk to us at 9:30. That's a piece that the lads did last night. We're going to hear from her, rather, at 9:30 this morning. OTBAM's live with Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. It's time for The Beef Is Real.
Well, I don't like them. And I don't have to work with people I don't like.
Patrick Vieira is 6'4". So I'm going to go Gary Neville. He says, come and have a go at me.
You should have gone to Specsavers, Charlie.
Well, maybe you should go also then, Jeff, because you couldn't see driving home the other night.
Don't you ever talk about me!
So I think your argument's back and forward there, Tony. That's the point.
I'm wondering...
Just let me finish. Let me finish.
I'm going to let you finish.
You were constipated on.
You can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
If you're going to be critical, then you've got to make sure you've got something to back it up with, don't you?
Maybe the coaches were maybe panicking a little bit.
To me, you've got to have a little bit of a better record than that.
The beef is real.
We haven't done this in a while.
Do you remember how to do it?
I think it was Rassi. I think it was Rassi versus... versus the world was the last time we did this, but it's obviously been quite a polite sports world we've been existing in over the last little while.
Or we've just been unbelievably lazy, who knows?
No, I think it's probably the latter of that. But this is something that we could have done at any point over the last few weeks. There is a new beef in town that is simmering to the boil. Scottie Pippen, who is a man on a revenge mission right now, I think it's fair to say. He is, after releasing an answer piece, that's what I want to call it. Like, I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with some of the great answer pieces in history. Like, I mean, they say that Katy Perry's California Girls is an answer piece to Alicia Keys' New York State of Mind. There was that Eamon and Frankie song like way back in the noughties when it was like apparently a breakup thing where Eamon writes a song saying F it, and apparently it was about her, and then she releases a song saying F you or B, F you right back, and there was just this public spat with two pieces of art. This is what we have right now.
Britney and Justin Timberlake might have done something similar.
Did they?
Well, Justin Timberlake certainly threw Britney under the bus.
Via song?
Yeah.
Via art?
I think via an album.
Via an album, right, okay.
Like one of his early, when he was like breaking out. He certainly did some bad stuff to Britney that he shouldn't have done.
Okay.
But anyway, go on. Sorry.
Well, yeah, you're Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears, 2021 version, is Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan. Because what was the biggest thing that was happening at the start of the pandemic, other than Tiger King? It was, of course, The Last Dance. And also around the start of the pandemic, Scottie Pippen gets an idea to write a book. So I think we can pretty much connect the dots there that this, his new book, his memoir, is an answer piece to The Last Dance. So let's just start by giving a few broad strokes from this book, which is released, I think, in the last couple of weeks. If you've not been following the story, this will just give you a bit of a temperature of what he's saying. So he says, I may go as far to say Mike ruined basketball. In the 80s on the playgrounds, you'd have everyone moving the ball around, passing to help the team. That stopped in the 90s. Kids wanted to be like Mike. Well, Mike didn't want to pass, didn't want to rebound or defend the best player. He wanted everything done for him. He also said, we didn't win 6 championships because he got on guys. We won in spite of his getting on guys. We won because we played team basketball. That's what was special about playing for the Bulls, the camaraderie we established with one another. Not that we felt blessed to be on the same team with the immortal Michael Jordan. Then he says, I was a much better teammate than Michael ever was. Ask anyone who ever played with the two of us. I was always there with a pat on the back or an encouraging word, especially after he put someone down for one reason or another. I helped the others to believe in and stop doubting ourselves. So, why is he so angry? Well, we got to go back to The Last Dance to remind ourselves of some of the things that might have pissed Scottie Pippen off. The big one was to do with Pippen's surgery that he needed on an injury he picked up at the end of the 1997 season. Much to the annoyance of Michael Jordan, he didn't decide to get surgery until the start of the following season. So let's remind ourselves very quickly of Pippen's rationale in the documentary for waiting until the off-season was over before getting the procedure.
I'm not going to f*** my summer up.
I mean, as good a reason as any. He wanted his time off. He wanted to enjoy his time off. To be fair to Scottie Pippen, he was tied for 122nd in terms of the best paid NBA players at the time. This is the late 90s, so he got screwed over with a terrible contract, a long-term contract, and you know what? He wanted to enjoy his time off. He should have been in the top 5 players in the league.
Very quickly, one of the best things American sport does is that they publish everybody's salary. It's all public. You get to know exactly how much the person beside you is making in the changing room, and you get to compare and contrast your stats with their money on a public basis week after week after week after week. It's why it's such a difficult nest of vipers on all the teams until everybody gets paid, and then when everybody gets paid, the success disappears. Like, it's a very curious balancing act, and it makes the sport so interesting.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have said that Pippen should have got paid a lot more that summer. They obviously tried to barter him as well a little bit, tried to use him as a chip with other teams. It wasn't a good summer for him, and he wanted to sit it out and miss the start of the next season. But at the end of episode 2 of The Last Dance, Jordan said, I felt like Scottie was being selfish. Now, you might say it's fair comment from Jordan to say this, but Jordan's opinion is totally at odds with the rest of the locker room. And that is according to someone who I would say is a pretty honest broker in all of this, Steve Kerr. So a short time after that episode aired, Kerr was on ESPN and he was asked about Pippen's surgery that season.
Was there resentment from other guys in the locker room about him doing that? No, not at all. In fact, you know, I thought it was interesting. We felt his frustration with him. You know, he probably should have been the second highest paid guy in the NBA, or definitely, you know, top five. So we all felt for him. Nobody resented him for having that surgery later. We all just understood, all right, let's give him his space, and he's going to be there for the second stretch of the season for us.
So not everybody on that Bulls team thought that this was selfish. And we should reiterate that this is petty. This is being very particular here. But I suspect that Pippen took that selfish comment in particular to heart, and Jordan probably knew that Pippen would take it to heart when he said it. So it's interesting then when we listen to Pippen's language here when he was speaking on the Dan Patrick Show a few months ago talking about Jordan.
What did you think when he said he was going to go play baseball?
I didn't really think about it. I was really focused on my own craft at that time, but I thought
it was a big decision though.
Yeah, it was a big decision, but It was a selfish decision, but it was kind of who Michael Jordan was. And that was a guy that kind of believed that he can do anything on his own.
So we're one all in the selfish stakes at this point. But the surgery wasn't the only point of consternation when Scottie Pippen was watching The Last Dance. And this was something that I think maybe a lot of us glossed over at the time, but there was reference to the migraine game in the documentary, which is kind of like the flu game, but way less famous, and something that I certainly didn't pick up on much while watching the documentary the first time. So we're talking here about the 1990 Eastern Conference Finals. The Bulls go down to the Bad Boy Pistons in a Game 7, and Pippen is struggling. He says he's suffering from a migraine, but listen closely to Jordan's tone here. This is from The Last Dance, speaking after Pippen, about Pippen and him not performing so well in that Game 7. And kind of make your own mind up here about what Jordan's tone is.
I told him I can't see. I was taken out of the game.
He said he had a migraine. I can't argue the point that he had a migraine. It was just one of those things that, you know, is so unfortunate.
So unfortunate that he had a migraine. Almost feels Saipan-esque in the accusing your teammate of an injury stakes here. This, I guess, would have touched a nerve because it was actually a big story at the time. This wasn't something that was hidden and unearthed as a result of The Last Dance. This was a pretty big deal at the time. Let's have a look at some of the reporting around the time on this migraine game. If we go to a year later, so this is 1991. This is Michael Wilbon, now of ESPN, writing in the Washington Post. The migraine in Game 7, for those of us who thought Pippen was too soft anyway, was confirmation that his psyche was fragile. A Chicago columnist suggested the Bulls should check the missing Pippen's bureau. Fans in NBA arenas would scream, "Scotty got a headache." The Pistons, among others, would snicker within his earshot or jostle him needlessly. Dennis Rodman still does it in games, Jordan said Sunday. So many people believe that if Pippen did have a migraine, it was brought on by fear of the Pistons in general, defensive ace Dennis Rodman specifically. Meanwhile, Scott Howard Cooper in the Los Angeles Times wrote, "There will probably always be a little migraine in the Bulls lore after a subpar 22-point showing in Game 1 of the recent Eastern Finals against Detroit." Bull guard Michael Jordan quipped, "I may have had a headache today." So this has been a thing and a little bit of needle between Jordan and Pippen for a while, and for Jordan to bring it back up in The Last Dance, I don't think that's sat too well. Thirdly then, and this is the third thing from The Last Dance that I think really would have sat badly with Pippen, was the depiction of the flu game. So if you saw the documentary, you'll know that the flu game was completely blown up. It was a massive part of the narrative in The Last Dance. Jordan was painted as this hero who overcame huge adversity in Utah after eating a bad pizza to play through flu/food poisoning to win another ring in 1997. But what was less covered in it, obviously, because this is a documentary produced by Michael Jordan, was that a year later, Scottie Pippen played through a back injury in a Game 6 as the Bulls won another championship. And you guessed it, Pippen thinks that his adversity in 1998 was tougher to get through than Jordan's flu a year earlier. So here is Scottie Pippen talking to Frankie Zola on that.
Here's my breakdown on that. I'm going to ask you this.
All right.
Is it easier to play with a herniated disc or to play with the flu?
They always say the worst injury to have is a bad back. So,
well, I don't see many bad back games, but I do see flu games. Flu. Come on.
I should say this is all on the book tour. This is all recent stuff that we're getting here. This is him constantly getting his own back, constantly nibbling away at everything that he saw in The Last Dance. So those are Pippen's grievances with Jordan. Like, the question I had is, what was Jordan's grievance with Pippen? Because it does feel that maybe there was a bit of a concerted effort to diminish him throughout the series. Like, he went in hard and everybody, but it seemed that he saved a little bit extra for Pippen. So when did it start? Like, if you rewind the clocks to 2016, we can look at how pally they were when a camera pans to them on screen. You can see them at a game together. And they go in for the bro hug. There they are. Like, I mean, they seem like pretty on good terms there, right?
It's awkward enough, isn't it? Look, Scotty, give everybody a hug there, yeah. Oh, yeah, look, we're on camera.
Well, my theory is this. My theory is that they actually were fine in 2016. But since 2016, Scottie Pippen has committed the most egregious sin you can possibly commit in the face of Michael Jordan. He has entertained the idea that he might not be the undisputed GOAT. So here he is, a year later, on First Take on ESPN, talking about some of the greatest players.
How close is LeBron to catching Jordan?
The numbers don't lie. He's right there. He probably would never catch him in terms of MVP.
Okay.
But in terms of statistics, LeBron is right there. And when you look across the board, not just scoring, mm-hmm. check his assists, check his rebounds, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. he's probably ahead of Jordan.
Oh, my God!
What? Just left a bit of Stephen A. in there at the end because that's what you need at 8 a.m. on a Thursday morning. In his book as well, on top of that, Pippen says, kids wanted to be like Mike, as I said. Well, Mike didn't want to pass, didn't want to rebound or defend the best player. He wanted everything done for him. That's why I always believed LeBron James was the greatest player this game has ever seen. He does everything and embodies what the game is truly about. Now, for good measure, here is Pippen on Kobe a short time after he passed away.
He believed in striving to be the best. You know, I hate that we didn't tell him how great he really was, because he strived so hard to be Michael Jordan. And when I go back and I look at his videos and I say to myself, damn, he was better than Michael Jordan, because he worked so hard. He put it in. This kid came out of high school. He didn't go play for North Carolina under Dean Smith. He worked at his craft.
So he's easily put Kobe and LeBron into the same conversation as Michael Jordan. And we're not saying that Michael Jordan is the type of person to take anything personally, but let's not forget Jordan's cooperation to participate in The Last Dance was signed off on the day that LeBron James won the 2016 NBA championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers. We're not saying he's petty or anything, but those are just the facts. To be fair, to give a little bit of balance on his side, Jordan did give Pippen credit at times. A direct quote from The Last Dance is that, I would never be able to find a tandem, another support system, another partner in the game of basketball like Scottie Pippen. He was a pleasure to play with. He helped me so much in the way that I approached the game, the way I played the game. Whenever they speak Michael Jordan, they should speak Scottie Pippen. He considers him the best teammate of all time. But if you go back to Pippen's book one more time, he says, in the second episode, which focused for a while on my difficult upbringing and unlikely path to the NBA, the narrative returned to MJ and his determination to win. I was nothing more than a prop. His best teammate of all time, he called me. He couldn't have been more condescending if he tried. On second thought, I could believe my eyes. I spent a lot of time around the man. I knew what made him tick. How naive I was to expect anything else. Each episode was the same. Michael on a pedestal, his teammates secondary, smaller. The message no different from when he referred to us back then as his supporting cast. Now, here I was in my mid-50s, 17 years since my final game, watching us being demeaned once again. He said he spoke to a few of his former teammates who each felt as disrespected as he did. How dare Michael treat us that way after everything we did for him and his precious brand? To make things worse, Michael received $10 million for his role in the doc, while my teammates and I didn't earn a dime. Another reminder of the pecking order from the old days. So, fair to say that Pippen was not a Last Dance fan, and abundantly clear that his distaste for the show goes way beyond the point of just wanting to sell a few books. But his criticisms haven't gone down well. Charles Barkley, for example, said Pippen was going big game hunting, looking for clicks. And that's kind of where the state of play is over there at the moment, that Scottie Pippen has released this book, but not a lot of people in the United States are in support of him or are buying into what he's doing right now. And maybe one day a truce does break out between Pippen and Jordan, and there's something public and there's a great coming together of minds here. But I'm just going to finish up with one last section from the book about Isaiah Thomas, the true butt of every joke in The Last Dance. So, in the book, Pippen says, in the spring of 2020, when the documentary was being aired, Isaiah was interested in the two of us declaring a truce. He reached out to BJ Armstrong, who called me. Would you be willing to talk to him? BJ asked. Dude, are you kidding me? When I came into the league, he was never nice to me. Why would I want to meet with him now? Isaiah is no fool. He knows better than anyone else how poorly he came across in The Last Dance, and a good reason. I wasn't about to make it easier for him. So, I mean, if we're talking about Scottie Pippen trying to repair some sort of relationship with Michael Jordan, then I think it probably goes both ways. We're almost into 2022, The Last Dance, still in the news. Jordan and Pippen still don't like each other, and everyone still hates poor old Isaiah Thomas. That is this week's The Beef is Real.
Well, I don't like him, and I don't have to work with people I don't like.
Patrick Vieira is 6'4", so I'm going to go with Gary Neville. He's just coming to have a go at me.
You should have gone to Specsavers, Charlie.
Well, maybe you should go also then, Jeff, because you couldn't see driving home the other night.
Don't you ever talk about me!
So I think your argument is back and forward there, Tony. That's the point.
I'm wondering...
Just let me finish. Let me finish.
I'm let you finish!
Pure constipated horror.
You can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
If you're going to be critical, then you've got to make sure you've got something to back it up with, don't you?
Maybe the coaches were maybe panicking a little bit.
To me, you've got to have a little bit of a better record than that.
The beef is real.
Yeah. Just to let you know, Rory McIlroy is 3 under 3-3, and you know, if you were to extrapolate that across to the rest of the tournament, he's going to finish 72 under par for the week. That's not bad going. We wish you the very best, Mr. McIlroy, in your bid to finish 72 under. 4 minutes past eight here this morning on OTBAM. I'm going to do a lot of these comments that are coming in on YouTube. We've been on since 7:30 this morning, and we are every morning. Mark Hogan starts the show with a "Hon Offaly." Come on, Mark.
Like that.
I like the commitment to your brand.
I agree.
Rommel says, "Let's ignore all sports and continue basking on our glorious victory over New Zealand." I mean, we've done a little bit of that. We're going to do a little bit of it a little bit later on in about 6 or 7 minutes time as well. And Michael O'Connell says, "The appointment of the director of football will be an enlightening insight into both the thinking and philosophy of the board." This is true. And Johnny Ward was making the point that it's actually a more important job than the manager of the national team. I think in the current global situation we find ourselves in, where we can't just pawn off the development of our players to England, to Scotland and England anymore, that actually the manager of the national team is hugely significant. Just precisely at this moment, as we're recovering from being told we're shit by successive managers all the way back, you know, since the 70s. So I see the argument, I do, but I definitely think that it's a very important test of the quality of thinking that's going on at board level in the FAI at the moment. I think Kenny is getting us moving forward next campaign and see where we stand then, it says Jack Reaper. I agree. Let's see then. I'm not saying the man's a genius. I'm just saying that there's signs of progress, and you know, let's see how well everything goes and the decisions they make. Then Bozang David Bozang, I don't know. "Folks, you're coming across as journalists disappointed in how the question was answered. As a fan, I'm okay with Packy's approach. Kenny's in." Well, Kenny's not necessarily in. Kenny might be in for like another extra couple of games on top of the ones that he had, as opposed to, yeah, okay, we're in this together. Whatever you might think about Manchester United's approach to social media, they're certainly backing their manager left, right, centre on their social channels in all dispatches. All, everybody is unified at the moment behind Solskjaer. "Keep Kenny in the job. It's crucial for Ireland going forward," to Shane Kelleher, "instead of listening to the miserable old timers like Brady, Kerr and Noel King." If Kenny doesn't get the job, then, says Rommel, may as well give the job to a Kerry man. Guaranteed some beautiful football, but with little or no tactical acumen.
It's true.
Oh, Sheehan's bodied. I mean, not anymore. They've not anymore. Things have changed.
Things have changed. Tactical geniuses only in Kerry nowadays.
Brian, you've got backroom inside information from north of the border.
Oh, yeah.
Paddy Talley.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's changed. I thought you were going to say that there's a Kerry man involved in the Ireland setup or something right now. But no, yeah. We've outsourced the tactical genius.
Amazing how good the Bulls were, given what happened behind the scenes. Absolute madness, says Shane Kelleher. And Scottie Pippen channeling Michael Scott there, says Deja Dude. Scottie's right to do what he's doing, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I'm Team Scottie here, 100%.
Like, he seems like a bit of an asshole as well. But, like, it's possible that everybody's an asshole.
I saw someone make the point a couple of weeks ago that Scottie Pippen's biggest problem right now is that Scottie Pippen is his own spokesperson. And he's doing all these interviews and he's speaking for himself. That if there was actually somebody who was able to statistically analyse the importance of Scottie Pippen historically to the Bulls and to Michael Jordan, and that person wasn't Scottie Pippen, then there would be a lot more people who were coming around to his way of thinking.
All right, so the analysis community,
yeah,
the analytics community would be Team Scottie.
Yes, and they're basically making the point that this sort of emotive language is coming across as quite petty, to be honest. But, like, I mean, it's beef. Sports beef is always petty. Sport is petty. I mean, we get wound up about very small details, and that is... And the sports people themselves, not just the fans, are no different to that. Like,
war without the bullets. 8 minutes past eight this morning here on OTBAM. We'd love to hear from you. 087 9180 180 is the WhatsApp number. Leave a comment on YouTube. You can get us at Off the Ball AM on Twitter as well. We've got John Duggan talking about the FAI in a little while. We've got Fiona Hayes next talking rugby.
Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.
OTB.
AM. 10 minutes past 8 this morning, time to turn our attention to rugby, and I'm delighted to say Fiona Hayes is with us. Fiona, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm good, lads. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Listen, tell us a little bit about what your immediate reaction was when you heard the news that Ciara Griffin was retiring.
Yeah, I suppose it wasn't a shock to me. I'd been chatting to Junior a couple of times around it. I thought she might have hung on, you know, they had a good win last week. So I was sad. I suppose I was sad to see her go 27 years of age. But, you know, other factors start coming into it at that, you know, when you get to that age. She's recently married as well. So it's a massive loss for women's rugby. I think what she brings on the pitch, off the pitch, is absolutely amazing. And she just gels everyone together. And she's just an immense rugby player, an immense trainer. Her work rate, everything about her. If you're a young player watching her, she just shows you how it's done, really.
She did make the point that if they qualified for the World Cup, then obviously she would have gone through to the World Cup. And I can see how that it's the end of a World Cup cycle. And so it's not a bad time to step away in that respect. It's very young. Like, and I understand that there are other parts of your life that you want to go and get involved in. And she talked about education and she talked about the farm and obviously she talked about family. And so, again, I do understand that. But if the organisation was perfect and if everything was seamless, do you really step away fully? Do you retire fully? Or do you say, I'm going to take a break for a couple of years and see what happens? Like, there's no formal sense that she might come back down the line.
No, there's no formal sense. But I suppose with Ciara's personality, she's all in. When she's training, she's all in. When she's playing, she's all in. So for her... as a person, I don't think it would have felt right to say, look, I'm going to step away and see how things go and I might come back. I think in her head, her decision was, this is now the time. She was obviously gutted about the World Cup. We have to look at the pressure she was under the last couple of weeks as well. You know, it wasn't a great place for her. She likes to do her talking on the pitch. And, you know, I suppose she's not even heavily on social media. So when all these things I think come into factor as well, to her as a captain, and you have to start dealing with all this kind of stuff. I mean, there would have been a lot of reasons behind her decision, but I think that kind of makes it a little bit, not, I wouldn't say easier, but it adds to why she should go and concentrate on that other things. And like Ciara's, she's a scream. She's some woman for the firemen. So she loves it. And I'd say she misses it, you know, even when she's up in camp and in the gym and those early mornings, I'd say she's dreaming about milking the cows, you know?
The atmosphere around the team is obviously not great at the moment. And to be the figurehead and the leader of certainly one aspect of it must have been tricky for her. So how much of that do you think fed into it?
I don't know. As she said, you know, there was the World Cup cycle, you know, she's recently married. She had a lot of things that came into it. Obviously, she was absolutely gutted in not qualifying for the World Cup. And in knowing Ciara, she would blame herself a lot of that, because as captain, she would feel that she should have dragged the team over the line. So she was under pressure. I don't think it's solely that, but I'd say when she came to her decision and she talked to her husband, to her family and those closest around her, I'd say when she came to her decision, it was probably somewhat of a relief, because she gets to step out of that pressure cooker. As I said, she does her talking on the pitch. You know, she's a woman of few words, but when you're training, when you're playing with her, she's absolutely given every little bit that she has. And, you know, and she's done that. She's done that for women's rugby, and I feel like she thinks it's time now.
And do you feel like the group are unified by what happened over the last week, or is there a division within the group as well about what's happened? And it just feels like at the moment there are different groups. There's the IRFU, and then there's some of the players who obviously were very upset about what's happened over the last week, and there are some of the players who feel like there's a different conversation needs to be had, and it's just hard for us on the outside to understand exactly what the dynamics are at the moment.
Yeah, for me, I think the players up at camp are absolutely unified. I think what you're dealing with, lads, as well, is you have some players, not that they don't feel it as much as others, but you have some players that are there years, that have felt disheartened for years, and you have some newer players in, so they probably don't quite understand it. Then you might have some of the sevens mixing in who deal in a different setup, and things are dealt differently with them, and you know how things are done. So in their unity together, they're 100% on the pitch, and I'm sure they've had these conversations, but I would imagine it's just more so, rather than a division, it's more so some players feel exceptionally strong. Everyone needs to be brought together, and I think that's the one thing coming out of it, is that they want to see clubs, everyone needs to be involved in this process, maybe not just the IRFU. Players, clubs, we're all going forward. Everyone wants a role, and they want to just for it to happen, I suppose, is what they want. And I know everyone will have a different agenda, but I don't think it has taken place where everyone has actually sat down and discussed, you know, what's their feelings on the women's game and how we can make this better.
Yeah, because I think that in the midst of what's going on at the moment, it's very easy for people to just I ascribe certain motivations to people for whatever is coming out. But actually, if you look at this long term, and you look at where the rugby team were a decade ago versus their competitors, and where they are now versus their competitors, it's clear to say that the women's team, and the women's 15s team in particular, is nowhere near as good and nowhere near as successful as they were. And that is a collective responsibility, but mostly it's the responsibility of the organisation who puts the team out, and they're the ones who are supposed to field it. And I think that's why there was such a strong reaction to Anthony Eddy's comments, was like, you've been in charge of this. When you took over, the team were competing for Grand Slams, World Cup semi-finalists, and now they haven't qualified. And that's where the disconnect comes between the finger-pointing at the players. Now, some of the players, by all accounts, do feel like they didn't perform, and do actually have a responsibility for being beaten by inferior opposition who they would normally beat. So, like, it's possible that there's truth in everything here, that the organisation has not done what they said they would do, and they're not holding themselves accountable, and that the players underperformed. Oh, there you go. We've just momentarily frozen with Fiona. Yeah, we'll get that back. 17 minutes past 8 this morning. We'd love your views on this. One of the burning issues in Irish sport at the moment, slightly overshadowed somewhat by the result at the weekend. I'd say no one was happier than Anthony Eddy when Joey Carberry was making it a 9-point win.
Yeah, that's it's a very good point, actually, that the Irish rugby conversation very quickly in the space of about 24 hours had changed, because Friday, even before the All Blacks game, there was only one story in town, and it wasn't the All Blacks.
Yeah, sorry, Fiona, we just lost you there when I was making the point that there's different pockets of responsibility here, and we kind of need to make sure that we talk about everything while at the same time not losing sight on where we are versus where we were.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's why I think everyone needs to sit at the table. We saw the RFU come out, and they were 100% right. Players felt like that they had done everything that they could possibly do in that time, but the players have other reasons behind that. They want to discuss it. There's other issues there as well, which stem back from years ago. I mean, Fiona Coughlin talked about she penciled these issues down in 2011, and she wrote a letter, and you know, she feels like the same issues are still there. And I think that's why everyone needs to be brought to the table, because there's little bits coming in from everywhere, whereas no one's actually had a discussion together about this. And it's not a blaming game. It's how do we fix this?
Yeah, OK. Let's talk about Razzy Rasmus, because obviously that was the other big news in the last 24 hours. We're given to understand that he will appeal his 2-month ban from all rugby and his 12-month ban from match day activities. I know people are immediately like, "Oh, that's a big hefty ban he's been given," and it's right. It would have been much better if they'd done that the week of the game when he actually did this and put the pressure on the referee in the next game, because it feels a little bit like it's after the event now. 2 months of all rugby, well, it's not the busiest time of the year for an international rugby director. Like, he's not going to miss that many important matches. And then, okay, fair enough, the year, a match day activity, that is a proper serious thing. But what's your take on this?
Yeah, I think, you know, I 100% agree. It should have been done at the time. I mean, we'd all nearly forgotten about it at this stage. I had to actually go back over the video and have a look at what he actually said. But, you know, I do think with the way the game is going with referees and TMO and stuff like that, that they needed to do something. They needed to say, you know, every week we're listening to coaches now question decisions. This is, it's human error. It's always been human error. I know TMO, I'm sick of listening to coaches after matches questioning decisions after games. Yeah, it's a big error, but we have to deal with this. I think they've actually put the foot down and said, look, there is big punishment here. You can't speak to people like that. Our officials are doing their best. And they've set a big marker here, I think.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed that's the end of the pre-match pressure on the referees. But for whatever reason, I don't think that some coaches are always going to try and get away with it. I tell you what, we might just get you back on the phone there to try and improve the quality of the line. It is 21 minutes past 8. You're watching or listening to OTBAM this morning. We're live with Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. What was your take on Razzy Rasmus?
It'll be interesting to see what sort of conclusion this reaches in terms of his own legacy. I mean, I don't know, it is kind of there is going to be no significant result of him missing 2 months, obviously, but it is interesting that the book has been handed to him a little bit here. And like, there's obviously the testimony from Nick Berry in all of this, which wasn't like, I mean, that kind of, I definitely would look at this in kind of a very light-hearted manner, and it's like, you know, this, we can all be tongue-in-cheek about this whole Razzy thing, and then you read the Nick Berry personal statement and it's like, Jesus, that is a big old personal toll on him. And he his own professionalism really felt it was under question, and even this sort of sense of the threats from Erasmus to release things were not for a meeting, and then the meeting doesn't happen, and then he does go and is good to his threat and actually releases his video detailing some of the grievances he had with the refereeing. It all kind of paints a picture where you do feel that this was over the line from Razzy, to say the very least.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if it doesn't get made public, it's totally fine. But the fact that it gets made public, that's ridiculous. Mm. Like, that's the egregious sin here. And we've got Fiona Hayes back. Fiona, let's talk about events on the field. We await with bated breath to see exactly what the makeup of the match day 23 is going to be for the game against Argentina this weekend. And we're very interested because there's an opportunity to really see some new blood, but there's also an opportunity for us to go out and put a third successive performance together. So it's a balancing act from the Irish coaching ticket. What would you do if you were in that selectors room? Are you more inclined to make sure that we catapult ourselves forward and guarantee the win as much as you can with your best team? Or do you desperately want to see the new blood and see how they get on in the big game?
I think it's time to get some of the new blood in there and see how they go. I mean, we've seen the two big performances. I think that the young guys coming in or the new guys coming in will definitely be under pressure to have a big performance. I mean, they're probably training well up at camp, you know, but he's stuck with kind of rigidly the last couple of teams, and we've seen such amazing performances. We've finally seen our attacking game in play, and I wouldn't mind seeing some of these new guys getting a chance to show that as well. Obviously, it wouldn't be wholesale changes. I think I'd be leaving thereabouts the front row, maybe change a second row, maybe a couple of back rows. But I'm definitely excited seeing a different back line, giving it a lash, I think.
The quality of the performance against New Zealand was so high that no matter what happens this weekend, it feels like there's going to be something of a letdown and a bit of a dose of reality if we don't blow Argentina away. And we're not going to blow Argentina away because like they're actually a really good team and they've done really well over the last number of years, and they always cause us trouble, particularly around the World Cups. So what's your expectation of what will actually happen and transpire in the game? What would you be happy with?
I'd be happy with seeing us stick to that attacking system where we have multiple playmakers available. We're playing the same style. I suppose I could be wrong. I don't know if we're going to get that same intensity at ruck time that we had. But you've guys that are chomping at the bit that have been waiting 3 weeks now to get on a pitch. So maybe I could be wrong on that. I will be happy. I think it will be a tighter game if there's changes put in there. But I do think Ireland will come away with the win. I mean, what you have on that in that panel that is to come on is really, really exciting as well. I'd love to see maybe Zeebo getting a goal. Craig Casey might come on. Balakoon is another guy that offers you exciting rugby. So there are chances to get these guys in there and have a go. But I'm sure they're all really, really focused and they've been training well and ready to crack the whip when they get out there. So I think we'll see a good performance again by Ireland.
Where is Zeebo at the moment in your back three picture? Is he like the front runner for the 23 jersey perhaps as this thing plays out over the next little while?
Yeah, I suppose you're looking at that. I mean, they've gone with Keith Earls the last couple of games, which I wholly agree. And I mean, there's a difference there. Earls could probably cover the centre three, whereas Zeebo can cover wing and full back. I think we can't even discuss even him taking the starting full back at the minute. Hugo Keenan is playing absolutely outstanding rugby. He's winning everything. He's a playmaker. He's attacking the space well. He's putting other people into space. So for me, I suppose it's about getting him out there. He might get a go on the wing this week, maybe not. But it's getting him out there and see exactly where he's at. We haven't seen him playing international rugby in a while, so it's a different ball game. You know, it's a high pressure, much quicker game. So it will be exciting to see where he is. But I think it's on the wing, maybe covering wingers for me.
Okay, it will be interesting to see how that all shakes out because, like, we still have other players who have been around the Ireland setup for years and who are out injured at the moment. And it'll be interesting to see if they get game time over the next 12 months, really, because that's when we all start thinking about the World Cup. The women's team play Japan on Saturday, and again, it's going to be very important for them to put down a performance and try and change the mood music around everything that's happening at the moment. So what level of expectation do you have ahead of that game?
Yeah, I've watched Japan a couple of times. I think Ireland will definitely get the win at the weekend. The crowds behind them, Japan are kind of at the back of a bit of a couple of losses. And I suppose a long tour, when you're losing games on the road, it's harder to get players completely up for it. I'm sure they will be, but I've watched them. They're a nice little team, but I think Ireland's power and dominance, if we can get the set piece right, like we did at times last week, we'll really, really put Japan under pressure. So I would definitely think you'd be looking at maybe a win, depending on if there is massive wholesale changes again.
Okay, good stuff, Fiona. Thanks a million for joining us.
No worries, lads. Thanks a million. Sorry about the line.
No worries. It's Fiona Hayes there giving us her thoughts on various stories that are brewing at the moment in Irish rugby, none of which are going to go anywhere anytime soon. What's your back three scenario? Where's Jordan Larmour in all this?
I was actually just thinking about him the other day. Where is Jordan Larmour in all this? I think at the moment he's kind of the sort of out of sight, out of mind situation. That's like you've got to throw Jacob Stockdale into that sort of mix as well. That there's been so much
Stockdale in this,
there's so much excitement even around Balakoon in terms of the people who are on the outside looking in, because he hasn't had that opportunity yet, and there's always a sense of excitement about somebody that we haven't seen too much in an Ireland jersey. So the back three that started the last day, clearly the top of the pecking order. Once you beat the All Blacks, that's always going to be the way. Then Keith Earls is probably next man up, and Zeebo's next man up.
Yeah. I keep pushing to try and see what would happen if we put Hench on the wing. Mm. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Because obviously Joe Smith thought he could play fullback. Experiment didn't quite work out. It's like the moment we all pinpoint as the ooh, this isn't going right.
Yeah.
I don't know, Manu Tuilagi played in the wing. That was part of Eddie Jones. Numbers don't matter. Everybody plays everywhere. You should be able to do that. And, like, we saw, particularly in the Japan game, James Lowe, first receiver, a bit less against the All Blacks. But he was certainly first defender at various stages when the ball breaks down. So, like, is that not just get your best players on the pitch? If you have Ringrose playing the way he is, and Bundiaki, like, Bundiaki's peaking at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, I mean, his kind of form almost ranked by his inclusion in the Lions squad in the summertime as well, that you probably could make a case that Henshaw, Ringrose and Bundiaki are definitely in the best 15 players for Ireland at the moment. So do you just try and shoehorn them in? The question is, like, Henshaw under the high ball, how well will he be able to stand up? And you would suspect pretty well, and that's why he was tried out at 15 that day. And I personally think that deep down Henshaw would like to get another crack at 15. And
ain't gonna happen though.
It's, like, not gonna happen, obviously, because Keenan's too good and that jersey isn't open. But
pre-match, we were looking and going at the warm-ups, and it's like, who's that really tall guy? Is that Hugo Keenan looks much bigger in person than he does on TV for whatever reason. I was like, wow, that guy's much bigger, because, you know, on TV he's standing beside the second rows at various stages, and the second rows, you forget, are all these, like, absolute hulks of men. But he's a much bigger, stronger, more physical unit than I had thought. I thought when he came into the team he was quite slight, but he's not.
Right.
He plays big.
I think that probably goes for every rugby player. They're always the perspective doesn't do any back favour when they're standing beside a pack, to be honest. But that's interesting. Now that you say it, like, I haven't maybe seen Keenan once or twice in the flesh, but I hadn't really picked up on that.
Well,
like,
he made the point that he's never played before full.
Yeah, before in front of a crowd, but I think I've been at a game in front of an empty stadium where he was. But the thing with that is that, like, it's just absolutely sewn up. If Keenan is out if he misses a game or two at any point, the question then is who's
the
next man up?
Yeah.
Like, and I think that is up for debate at the moment.
Maybe.
Well, you think Zeebo is...
Well, I don't know. I think Andrew Conway probably goes there, does he?
Yeah. Yeah, like, I think Conway's an option, and I think Sebo's an option.
Has Conway played himself into the team now, these two games? Like, the best ability is availability in various stages where he wasn't available, or, like, his form is certainly peaking at the moment as well?
Yeah, well, Conway, I think, has been really excellent ever since 2018. Ever since Ireland were last good, Conway's been one of Ireland's best players throughout the... what would we call the last couple of years, the end of the Schmidt era and the start of the Farrell as head coach era. I think he had been
the dark age.
Yeah, the dark age. He'd been consistently one of the best players, and obviously there was a couple of games that he'd missed, but he comes back and he puts himself right into that picture, and he's definitely a contender for that 15. But I think he's on the wing right now, and were the 15 jersey to come up, I think it'll be very interesting to see who they go for. Like, this is a huge weekend for Zeebo, assuming he gets,
he's got to get in. Yeah,
because he would definitely be in that conversation as well. And as we discussed with Fiona there, that the 23 jersey has never been straightforward at Ireland. There's never been a clear pecking order in the back three and the backup.
Right, it's 8:32 this morning. Let's run you through the sports pages and see what's going on in the world of sport. We can start with otbsports.com. WTA concerned over safety of Peng Shuai after forged email. Boxing civil war continues as IABA expels three provincial bodies. There is, beating New Zealand doesn't mean anything for Ireland moving forward, says Ronan O'Gara. I'll play the clip in just a moment, and loads more as well. Check out otbsports.com, get your hands on the OTB Sports app. Back page of the Herald. Kenny's fate not in my hands, says Bonner, who could have caught the ball and kicked it out but decided not to. Ryan wants big finish against Argentina. That is James Ryan, Ireland captain. James Ryan, is he going to be this weekend? Packy tight-lipped on Kenny. Happy ending. Major boost for Klopp ahead of Gunners' showdown. Jurgen Klopp's injury worries have eased 2 days before the Premier League clash with Arsenal. That's a big game. Arsenal playing well. I'm not the kingmaker. Bonner, former Celtic keeper, is encouraged by Ireland progress but insists Kenny's future is FAI board call. Of course, he's on the board. Bonner refuses to endorse Kenny but points to progress, is the headline over Gavin Comiskey's piece. And a year before Qatar, ranking the top 10 contenders for the title. Good idea to power rank. That's a good idea. Who do you think they have number one for
France.
The World Cup?
No, not France. No. Who did it? Like, it's not Spain by any chance, is it?
Spain are fifth. France are second.
France are second, number one. It's not England, is it?
England are fourth. You can just name countries randomly now on.
Germany?
Germany third on.
Third. Brazil, Argentina?
I mean, you just named two countries there. Which are you doing?
Brazil.
Okay, Brazil number one. Hey, come on down. Argentina number six. Well done. You named six countries. Correct. They are countries.
What about
Uruguay hammered by Bolivia in La Paz? It was on Premier Sports the other night, so I ended up watching like 3 or 4 minutes of it. They look like they might be like in a lot of trouble.
We need to like find a Canadian football correspondent who may or may not be a former Irish professional, because that is, if we're looking outside of South America and Europe, there may or may not be a little bit of a hipster team in Canada coming through.
He is very excited about it.
Yeah.
His timing has been absolutely impeccable. He has arrived just as football has exploded.
If anything, he had done a scouting beforehand and knew that Alphonso Davies was coming and all these players to shoot him into the next World Cup. And of course, it's going to be back-to-back World Cups for them for sure, because
they're hosting the next one. Yeah, it's like it's good time to be Kev. Back in the swing, Carberry admits it has taken time to shake off Russ. So Joey Carberry is the front cover of the Examiner. How much is that Poggy in the window? It's Paul Pogba, and his agent thinks he's a dream maker. This quote is brilliant. December is the month of dreams, and I can't stop dreams. But it is better not to speak about Paul, says Mina Raiola. If some former Man United players don't speak about me and Paul, they won't work anymore. He's obviously learned from the curious syntax of Jose Mourinho.
I was just about to say that. It does sound very Jose.
It's brilliant, isn't it? I think I realise that everybody thinks the agents have been, you know, a blight on football, but Mina Raiola is a brilliant character to have in our lives.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. We should do a tribute to Mino Raiola. What a great guy he is.
It is too early to speak about Paul Pogba's contract. Let's see what happens. I can't stop anyone from dreaming, he said, speaking about Paul Pogba's contract. Pogba's undergoing warm weather training in Dubai. Warm weather training. pineapple juice or whatever it is. I would like some warm weather training. I've got a bit of a sore back, you know.
It's the NFT capital of the world, Dubai, obviously. Paul Pogba is slaying dragons on crypto or whatever, dragonslayer.com or Dragon Master, whatever it is that Paul is.
Let's get to the big story of the day. There's loads of other stuff there. The English cricket board are in crisis, and the contracts, and Razzie's rant, and the ban and stuff. And but the big story of the day, of course, broke yesterday afternoon when pictures emerged of a stunning achievement. It was victory in the five-a-side at the Manchester United training ground for a team which, I mean, it's obviously an unstoppable force of nature. We have various things. So Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was back at work. So he'd taken last week off, apparently gone to Norway. We saw pictures of him flying out to Norway, I think. But he's back at work, just so that everybody knows. Ollie's at the wheel. Training's gone great. I would assume everybody's back from international duty at this point, but they're not. Certainly, it's not full teams. So here we go. This one here is Wan-Bissaka with McNeil and Hannibal, who've come up from the under-23s. Look at them putting that pressure on Aaron Wan-Bissaka. One of them is a defender who scored and assisted. It's like, wow, this guy's scoring and assisting for the under-23s. Remember, under-23 is friendly football. It's like absolutely friendly. And this is Sancho with Alvaro Fernandez. He looks curiously like one of the two guys we've just labelled McNeil or Hannibal. But it turns out we don't really know that much about these guys. Now, are we supposed to? Is this the bit that gets the Man United fans super excited and subscribing? And here is the greatest five-a-side team in Manchester United training history. Diallo, Rashford, Sancho, Wan-Bissaka and Henderson. The winners of the five-a-side, which proves, according to the headline in the Mirror yesterday, that the team has given Ole Gunnar Solskjaer his backing because they are happy at training. This was all released yesterday. Man United are putting out the pictures. What's going on here? All joking aside, what's going on? What do you think?
I was going to suggest that what we're seeing here is just a great movement into futsal from people who aren't going to get into the actual football team over the next little while.
Well, maybe that might be it. You know, Jadon Sancho, the world's most expensive futsal star.
I mean, he could do worse things at the moment.
I bet you he'd go down to Brazil and not be that good at futsal compared to some of the Brazilians who are genius at it.
I wouldn't be surprised. But what are you suggesting here?
It's a very strange 3 days out from a Premier League weekend series of pictures to release. Like, you know, what's actually happening here is that the Manchester United operation is hungry for content, and so they need to feed the fans, and that's great. But I'm not sure that it's actually the right thing from the manager's perspective to be getting out there, right? Everybody's happy and trying. If they get whacked this weekend, they'll be like,
That Marcus Rashford is getting photoshopped into a lot of different scenarios if they get whacked this weekend. That him on the ground with his arms waving, like,
Yes.
So you think that, like, I mean,
why are they celebrating the five separate photographs? Why are you doing that?
Can't they not just be happy?
They can be happy, and that's fine, and that's grand. But, like, maybe don't be happy ostentatiously when you're in the middle of one of the worst slumps, when the manager's job is up for grabs. Like, I understand that the reality is that they worked very hard, right? They had a good training session and they're feeling confident about what's coming next, and they might be about to go on a run, fair enough. And maybe they'll pinpoint this week of training when loads of players didn't go on international duty, for example, who, you know, Rashford was ill. Seems to be okay. Like, it's an interesting... England have already qualified. Game's not that important. What's going to happen? Help me out here. Don't go, right? I'm not saying that happened, but it might have happened. It happens all the time. I'm not saying it happened in this case. But... In the desire to push the content out, because you need to feed the hungry beast of content all the time, sometimes you let stuff go that is, like, not actually... They should have been hard at work. Here's the wall lining up, getting ready to be smacked in the face from a free kick. Here's some goalkeepers saving, you know. But it's like, no, we are having that crack because we are footballers. And one of the other things is like, oh, they worked really hard this week. It's like, Jadon Sancho didn't get called up because he's not playing very well for England at the moment. So he had nothing to do except go to work for his 180 grand or whatever it is that he gets. He's supposed to be at work. Now, they had a few days off to rest and refresh and recharge and all the hours. And, like, why... I get you need to push the content out.
Yeah.
You need to be careful about the content you're pushing out.
I would say that there's almost like a kind of a hilarity to if you saw Rashford and Sancho.
Do you know any other five-a-side result ever in a training match? Ever?
Other than ones that I've played in, no.
Like, maybe the Dubs beat the Colchis. You might hear a little bit about that. Yeah. But, like, you know, that's slightly different, isn't it?
This is Manchester United Football Club, the biggest sporting institution in the world.
You're not supposed to know who wins the five-a-sides.
It would be
not the week of it.
It would be funnier.
20 years later, you might hear that, like, Keane kicked Neville in the bollocks and they won 3-0. I don't know, but, like, now
was Wayne Rooney on Jason Knight a five-a-side? I wonder. What, like, it would be funnier if they all had their game face on and then they got smashed. At least they're smiling now and they know that they're a joke before they get beaten up over the next couple of weeks. Like, that is there's a sense of self appreciation there, I guess.
Maybe I'm reading too much into this, but. Sachin Bangaru, yo, OTB is brutal, he says. In the live environment, we love the feedback loop. The United spin machine at it again, says David McLean. They really don't have a clue. And Shane says, who cares about results when we're getting good content? # content at the wheel. I think that might be my point.
Antonio Content should have been the manager.
I mean, we're seeing plenty of that. And look, that's the business they're all in, and I get it. You just want to make sure that the editorial view on the whole thing is a bit more. Now, here's the other side of it, right? Here's the other side of it. Everybody is right behind Solskjaer. Like, that's the other side of this is that Solskjaer's happy. It's a happy camp. They're ready to go. They're ready to burst into that next portion of the season. The club is right behind them. You know, there are other sports organisations that could learn a little bit from the... So, yeah, I'm not saying it's all bad. I'm just saying that it struck me as a little bit curious when we're finding out the results of the five-a-side.
Like, I mean, the question that you always have to ask at these moments is, what would Roy Keane say?
It would be interesting to find out, wouldn't it? I mean, I think we probably will at the weekend. Right, Arsenal and Ireland fans do not want to miss our next Carberry FC roadshow. We're going behind the scenes with the Arsenal invincible Robert Pires and Gunner star and Ireland captain Katie McCabe. We'll also be joined by the former Arsenal strength and conditioning coach and Ireland rugby legend Gerry Flannery. It's all thanks to Cadbury FC and their club partnerships, granting you behind the scenes access at the Premier League's biggest clubs. Coming soon to OTB Sports social channels. What do you want to ask Robert Pires?
Oh, that is an outstanding question. Like, I think that there's a Kenny Cunningham type deep dive on Thierry Henry and getting the opposite perspective of it, instead of being blown away by being an opponent, actually getting to get out of his way as he infiltrates your wing, because that was a genius of Pires. I want to ask him about the penalty against Villa, obviously. I think that's I saw it shared on social media today that Henry and Niall Quinn tried recreating it. I'm not sure, was that old soccer AM or is it new, but they tried recreating the penalty, and it again had the same outcome where it didn't end up well. But
Henry and Niall Quinn,
Yeah.
Right, wow.
So I'm not sure if that's new or not. But yeah, anything, I think Thierry Henry is going to come up a bit in that conversation, isn't he?
All right. Andy Dunn and Ronan O'Gara joined Joe last night for Wednesday Night Rugby. You can listen back to it on the OTB Rugby podcast. If you're on iOS, just hit the download and give it a couple of minutes and it will work eventually for you. Apologies about that. In the meantime, as I said yesterday, our most pointy-headed of pointy-headed people are working on it. You can watch back on our YouTube channel, of course. Let's hear from Ronan O'Gara. He wasn't letting us get carried away after the All Blacks win.
We can step back for a second and just talk amongst ourselves here. Based on that level of performance now, this looks really promising for this Irish team.
I would disagree completely with you, because I think this game on Sunday will be completely different, because you're going to be up against a dogged, difficult Argentinian team. It's over, the game at the weekend, and that's what happens nowadays, Joe. It's parked, it's over. Like, the three test series in the summer will be completely different to playing in November. It's the flip side of what happens here. New Zealand come to Ireland at the end of a long season, particularly long season this time. Ireland will go to New Zealand at the end of a long campaign in June, so the roles are reversed. You look at even the major, I suppose, difference for me was New Zealand looked stale or jaded. Ireland were absolutely buzzing with energy. They celebrated every little mini victory throughout the 80 minutes, and they won the battle of the body language convincing.
Yeah, it's Ron O'Gara there. John Duggan, good morning to you.
How are you doing, Jarno?
Yeah, very good.
I think we need to enjoy beating the All Blacks. It took over 100 years. We've now beaten them three times. Have that extra scoop of ice cream. Have that chocolate bar. Have that additional drink. Enjoy yourselves. Life's short.
Smell the flowers.
Enjoy it. Donald Trump, I don't know if you ever heard that story, or I always found a really funny story, that at whatever meetings with dignitaries or dinners, that Donald Trump would have an extra scoop of ice cream and nobody else would have one. So he deliberately had that extra scoop. He had a chocolate cream pie and he had two scoops of vanilla ice cream. Everybody else could only have one. So have that extra scoop.
It's quite a power play, isn't it?
It is a power play, but it's very much wedded to the babyish narcissism of Donald Trump. I always found that kind of funny story.
It's fairly indicative of who the man is, indeed.
Yeah.
Right, what's going on?
Rory is flying. He is now 4 under par through 6 holes at the DP World Tour Championship.
I said he was going to finish 72 under if he kept it up. So
well,
we're at about like 40 under now at that rate.
Yeah, he is brilliant with his irons. He got an eagle on the second and he just flushed one there into the fifth to about 3 or 4 feet and made the putt.
It's November. It's Rory's month. He's always great in November.
Well, he's spoken before the tournament about the fact that he's working with Michael Bannon again, his coach, since he's been 8 years of age. It seems like the Pete Cowan experiment has certainly dimmed. I know he's known Pete Cowan for a long time as well, since he was a teenager playing for Ireland. But it was all a few months ago about Pete Cowan being involved and maybe a change of coach. But Michael Bannon definitely seems to be now more primarily in the picture. Rory is very much an artist who does not filter his emotions. I think that's amazing, whether it's being against the Saudi back golf tour or not going to the Olympics or whatever reason he has for what he says. He doesn't really sugarcoat or filter things. I think that's refreshing. He's a man who needs to play with freedom, and he did that in Vegas after the emotion of the Ryder Cup, and he's doing that again today. So look, Rory is at his best when he is at his most free, but he does tend to zigzag a lot in terms of who he uses. I remember from a putting perspective, he used Dave Stockton for a while and won a major championship with him. Then he was with Brad Faxon recently. Remember, there was a guy called Clayton Skaggs that he was referring to before the Masters, this mind kind of guru, talking about the juggling at the time. So look, everybody tries to do what they can to use the tools in their arsenal to deliver their best performance. But maybe Rory's best way, as he has been talking about recently, is to be as free as he can. And maybe that might bring him back to the winners in circle in a major style in 2022 after an 8-year gap. Shane Lowry's 1 under par through 6 holes as well. So that's the golf. We have Leona Maguire in the LPGA Tour Championship later on. Seamus Power and Gray McDowell in the RSM Classic. You can get the tips for that on otbsports.com and on the app for Virtual Insanity. Razzy Erasmus, as we know, got the book thrown at him. Banned for 2 months from rugby and also not allowed into match day activity until next October, effectively, after being found guilty of 6 charges of misconduct. He will appeal a 24,000 fine for the South African Union after this criticism, this one-hour video that he used to criticise Nick Berry, that match official from the first test. And Nick Berry has been very strong in his statement about the character assassination that he felt Erasmus engaged in. obviously he just was law unto himself, and he's now facing the law.
Yeah. And I made the point that justice delayed sometimes is justice denied. Would have been great if this had actually happened the week that he did it, and they're like, okay, yeah, right, grand, can't be doing that, 2 months and a year, off you go. But now it feels like, what's the point? What's he going to really miss?
And then we have all the back page stories about Paddy Bonner not being the kingmaker around Stephen Kenny and Stephen Kenny's new contract. As we know, this is dragging on a bit in the newspapers, and look, they've got to sell newsprint, and we got to talk about it. But Stephen Kenny's deal expires next summer, midway through the Nations League campaign, and there's going to be probably more airtime and print devoted to Stephen Kenny's contract, which I don't think is really necessary, because I think the two most important constituencies out there are the public and the players. And the public and the players, to me, seem clearly bought into what Stephen Kenny's been doing and the improvement that he's shown as manager of the Republic of Ireland team. Now, the FAI make the decision, that 12-strong board, that it's good that you have checks and balances there now and you have a 12-strong board. You don't have board capture and vulnerability to that as we would have had in the past. But also, that new FAI board needs to prove itself just as much as Stephen Kenny needs to. And any kind of uncertainty that penetrates the atmosphere around Stephen Kenny over the coming months could only, in my view, be a destabilising force for the environment around the team, which is completely bought into what he's doing. If you listen to Seamus Coleman or Shane Duffy or Josh Cullen or Jason Knight, they're all behind the manager and what he's trying to do. So I do think he needs that certainty. I covered the entire 2005 campaign for the World Cup when Brian Kerr was manager, and there was a lot of uncertainty at the time over his deal. And I don't think that helped matters back then. And I do think that the FAI needs to give a bit of certainty around Stephen Kenny, because the most important constituencies are the players and the public, because it's the national team. This is not a club. And we saw with Steve Staunton when they lost to Cyprus, or was it they lost to Cyprus in Dublin or drew with Cyprus in Dublin? You could see back then that everybody knew that was the end of it for Steve Staunton.
Did Stephen Ireland score a winner against Cyprus? Was that?
It was an equaliser, wasn't it?
Was it?
It was a 1-1 draw, was it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay, we lost 5-2.
5-2 was there.
Over there. Yeah.
Not a great result.
And you could tell back then that a change was on the way, because the fans were voting with their feet. They didn't turn up. We had a full house against Qatar and a full house against Portugal. So I think the evidence is there that there's a buy-in, and I think that needs to be listened to.
Yeah. Should Paddy have just given an opinion yesterday and been a bit stronger?
Well, what is his opinion? We don't really know what his opinion is. If he'd given a strong opinion in favour of Stephen Kenny, would that have got negative press? No.
You know what? If he said, these are my reservations.
Yeah.
These are the specific things that I have, and I'm going to have those conversations because I'm in a position to, as a board member, to find out. And if I get answers to those, I'll be happy. But instead, it's like I'm not going to tell you anything because I know you're just looking for a headline. And the headlines come out and it's like, he refuses to.
Maybe he's sensitive to the fact that he is the football person on that board, and maybe he doesn't want a narrative to go out there that he has more influence in the situation than he does.
I mean, fair enough, he is the football person, but you would assume that everybody else on the board is actually going to take their responsibility as an individual seriously, and not just take the, oh, you're telling us what to do here, because that might be one of the problems that we had with previous boards, where there was a very strong, you're going to tell us what to do on this matter. Like,
one thing I was also say about the national team, would you guys agree that the national brand under Stephen Kenny is good?
Yes.
I would say so. There's a shirt sponsor that we need. The FAI need commercial revenue. That's why Jonathan Hill, who's got an expertise in this, is there. We saw with the women's team. The women's team brand is fresh. It's in a great place at the moment. And we've got these two games coming up. They've got Sky on board, Cadbury on board. Everybody wants to be part of it. It's growing. And I think the same thing is with the men's team. Like Ogbeni scoring the other day, the great story about his inclusion in the team and the way he's come into the fray, the first African-born player to play for the Republic of Ireland. So I think that there's a positivity and a feel-good. And if all the fans are going over to Luxembourg and singing Winter Wonderland and you're getting these sell-out games.
And what we're talking about now is we're going to give Kenny a two-month extension to his contract after that.
That is not listening to the public and the players.
You know what I was saying? I don't know if you all saw Liam Brady on the Late Late Show, where he was like, oh, a taxi driver was saying to me, where's he going to go? Manchester United. Maybe Stephen Kenny will tell Ireland to go screw themselves if they only offer him a 2-month, because that's what he should do. He should say no. You want me? No, you don't want me. It's your choice.
I think that it would be unhelpful for us to get into this sphere around Stephen Kenny, because what it'll do is it'll just create uncertainty. We're still, as I said the other day, in a little bit of a fragile position with the team, because the quality that we have at our disposal is not as good as it could be, but through nobody's fault, right? Therefore, it's a delicate situation for us trying to improve under Anthony Barry, Stephen Kenny and Keith Andrews. That is a situation you need to treat with kid gloves. And you can't destabilise it by having, well, is he going to be here next week, or is he going to be gone by next summer? And then we've got to get a new manager in and new philosophy and new style. And what would that be? What, trying to qualify for the Euros in a pragmatic, functional fashion? And then there's no real kind of long-term plan for USA 2026.
No, we don't want that. Right.
So therefore, that's your answer.
Good stuff, John. Thanks very much for that. John will be back with you, obviously, on Saturday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Off the Ball on News Talk. Is 8:54 this morning. Of course, you can read his column, Virtual Insanity, on the OTB Sports app right now. OTBAM is live with Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors. But actually, what I'm supposed to say is proud sponsors of Movember, gentlemen, let's mow. We are. I mean, how could I forget? Right. This weekend, it is Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa debut as manager, obviously. And I'm delighted to say it is Ty Bracey's OTBAM debut this morning to talk about this. Ty, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
So what's your level of excitement about this? Are you like super excited to see exactly what happens? Are you feeling a little bit of separation anxiety from the Villa fan who was just the manager, who's now going to be in the dugout against us in a couple of weeks' time? What are you thinking?
I mean, it started off a bit, you know, after it took a lot to sink in to come to the conclusion, you know, that Dean was actually gone. Whether it was a bit premature or not, it depends on who you ask. You know, I understand both sides of the story. You know, there's people who say it was the right time, and then people who say he should have been given more time based on things that had happened over the last 3 years. But the more I thought about Stephen Gerrard being in charge, the more I got used to it, the more I got excited about it. And he has said in his interviews, he speaks very, very passionately in his interviews. He's a very no-nonsense type of coach. And I'm really excited to see him bring that to Villa Park. So for me personally, I'm really excited to have him on board, yeah.
I'm still to be won over a little bit, but I guess one of the things that's in the plus column from Gerrard's perspective is that he seems to have turned down the Newcastle gig. Whether or not he was realistically being considered for it, you would say he probably was, given that they ended up with their third choice, it looks like. So the fact that he turned that down means that he wasn't just looking for any job in the Premier League, and means that he wanted to take something seriously, and obviously sees that there's an opportunity here at Villa to take it seriously. There is that nagging concern about the Liverpool job being constantly spoken about with regards to Gerrard over the next while, and I don't know how to make an accommodation with that, Ty.
A lot of people have asked me this question, and it's a tough one, really, and I think Jamie Carragher had said it outright last week that Aston Villa is no stepping stone club. And I do strongly believe that. Whether he ends up at Liverpool one day as a coach, maybe. But right now, he needs to prove himself in the Premier League at the highest level. And he's coming in mean business. And back to your comment on the Newcastle gig. Aston Villa Football Club as a whole is a huge package. You know, so you have to take into consideration how you've set up. Newcastle don't have a youth setup like us. They haven't invested millions and millions in their youth products. And, you know, we have so much talent coming through the ranks. And that's an exciting time, especially under Steven Gerrard, because he's one of the greatest Premier League players of all time. So he's going to have that pulling power with the youngsters to bring down to Villa Park for the ones who are in the younger years. But I think he will end up at Liverpool eventually, but again, it's one of those things. I don't think it will happen until he proves himself at the highest level, and I think that's really important. I think he needs to. He's listened to the owner's plan, and he's got to take it on board. And if he doesn't succeed, then he'll end up with the same path as Dean Smith, unfortunately. So he's got a lot to prove for himself and for Aston Villa. So I'm excited for it.
Ty, tell me a little bit about what the transfer system is at Villa, because it felt like the last manager ended up with too many forwards and not quite the type of players that he wanted to play, and then that resulted in him trying to shoehorn everybody into the team, the formation changing very regularly, and the settled team didn't ever emerge. And in the end, that might have done for him. So is there a transfer committee? Who makes the final decision on whether or not the squad is imbalanced or what the right balance in the squad is?
As far as I'm aware, it falls on Johan Long, and who's in charge of recruitment. And then it will ultimately fall on Perslow. It will fall on Christian Perslow. It'll be between those two, I would say. I would say that Dean Smith would have had a say in the transfers to some point, to some extent. But, you know, we've losing Jack Grealish in the summer. It was one of those things. How do you replace a £100 million player who's your club captain, supports Aston Villa? It's not possible. So there was always going to be teething issues at the start of this season without Jack. And we were a substantially better team with Jack in there. The issue with the forwards is, I mean, it's a nice position to be in, but we essentially had too many strikers. We used to play a 4-3-3 system, and we had Ollie Watkins and Danny Ings, who both want to play in the middle. So it caused all kinds of problems. So to get a system in with two up the top, they have to change things. If they want to keep the players happy, they have to change things. And I don't think Ollie Watkins would have gone back on the left wing. I think Steven Gerrard will stick to a 4-3-3. I think that seems to be his style of play from a little bit of research that I've done on the system that he played at Rangers. Plays a high press, you know, and when you're in the ball, you're in control of the pitch. You know, that's very much what Steven Gerrard will bring. He'll bring that intensity of when you are on the ball, you are in control. And I'm really excited for that. But I think Steven Gerrard's been given a budget in January as well to do some bits. So that's also going to be exciting. I think there's a few areas of the field that we need to definitely add to the ranks, but I don't think the forwards is one of them.
Like, it definitely is a two-way street, the whole Jack Grealish thing, where you mentioned there the money that they got for him and the signings that they've made with that money. That naturally, it's not necessarily bad signings that they've made. It's just a matter of time before those signings will actually bed in. Is that your sense that actually the Grealish money, as it were, that'll just take a little bit of patience from Aston Villa supporters before this thing actually comes good?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's going to take time. I mean, I read somewhere online that Dean Smith, in his showdown talks with Perslow when he had lost his job, that he had stressed, apart from the game before he had lost, before he was sacked, he said that Buendia, Watkins and Bailey had only played 35 minutes together. So when you look at it from that perspective, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, okay, we've got a valid point there. These players haven't had time to gel on the pitch. And I just feel like we had lost our identity on the field, and I don't want to blame that it was the strikers hadn't gelled together. I feel like we had lost our identity on the pitch. We were playing a lot of hoofball. We didn't really look like we had a plan. And that's where, after we had lost that fifth one in the row, heads really started to drop after that.
It's funny, 2-0 up against Wolves with 10 minutes left to go. It looks like everything's going well. Was that Buendia's best game? Had he come off the bench or had he started that game? But certainly he'd made contributions in that game. You're like, oh, I'm starting to see something here.
Yeah.
And then it just all went tits up. And like, that's that sliding doors moment in Dean Smith's Villa career, where if they win that game, he's still in the job now.
Absolutely, yeah. And the part of the problem I had with that game was we were 2-0 up and we kept two up top. We kept the shape, we kept the formation, and we got punished for it. I think they bought on Podence, Wolves, and he changed the game. He bought issues, and they punished us for it. And that was a really tough one to take, you know, not just because Wolves are a local team, just because going 2-0 up and then falling apart, when you've had a really good 80 minutes of football, it is a really tough one to take, because we were predominantly the better team for the majority of the game, and then the last 10 minutes we crumble.
The going three at the back as well kind of seems like one of those things that you need to be very committed to it. You need to really understand exactly what the ambition of the team is going to be when that happens. It felt a little bit like it was a stopgap to try and shore up a defence, and in the middle of that, when you go back to that, you drop Tyrone Mings, who's obviously kind of this iconic cult figure who had been a leader for the team over the last couple of years and got to the fringes of the England team and right into the England team in the Euros. like that just felt like a manager who was beginning to doubt himself and second guess his decisions. And when that happens, you can see why a club will ultimately say, right, sorry, mate, you've lost the run here. And rather than wait for you to get it back, we're going to go another direction.
Yeah, the change of formation was a tough one. People were optimistic because they wanted to see change because they seen the flaws in the 4-3-3. But when we went with the 3-5-2, if you want to call it that, there was times where it looked great, but there was times where we got punished for it really bad. And we're in a position where we had, we matched the clean sheet record of Brad Friedel in Emi Martinez's first season at Aston Villa. And then this season, we're not even getting close to clean sheets. We're getting dominated in most of our games. So there's definitely, it's nice to get that feel-good factor back because social media hasn't been the greatest to be around. You know, it's been pretty doom and gloom on social media. A lot of people have been, you know, there was a lot of people calling for Dean Smith to go. We need change. And predominantly, I think we needed someone in the middle of the field. And I said that during the transfer window. And I think that was somewhere where we looked very light and it never came through. So I think better days are ahead, most definitely.
Even taking that into account, given the fact that Aston Villa are 2 points above the relegation zone, was there any part of you that thought to yourself, God, it is a little bit risky going for a Gerrard at this moment? I'm not saying a point Big Sam or anything like that, but there were maybe a few more seasoned Premier League managers that might have been appointed for a team that might be in a relegation battle.
I mean, you could look at it that way, but I don't look at it in a way that we're in a relegation battle. I just look at it, we've got a bad run of form. The squad we have, I don't think we're anywhere near relegation battle. Right. Anything in the top half of the table, I'll class it as success for this season so far. Whether that happens or not, it's a different story. But what we have to do is get behind the players, get behind Steven Gerrard and believe in what he's going to bring to Villa. You know, he's a huge figure in football as a whole. So I'm really excited to see what he brings to Aston Villa. And in a way, there probably isn't that much pressure on him as much as we probably think, because can we do much worse than five in a row? As long as it's not another five in a row, then I don't think he can do much worse, if I'm honest.
I hope you're right.
It's interesting what you say, that you classify a top half of the finish as a successful season. Like, when kind of like thinking about last year, I thought that last season was definitely, you could make an argument that maybe Villa overachieved what people predicted at the start of the season, and they still finished 11th. So you think that this team this year, from this position, has a chance of outdoing what was a relatively successful season last year?
Definitely, yeah. We had a great start to the season last year, you know, with the 7-2 bopping against Liverpool. There were some great results and we gave some really good teams a really good game on the pitch. And then our form fell off towards the end of the season, and that was where we started to slip down a little bit. We could have easily finished top half of the table and pushed for Europe if we had Jack for a full fit season. But I think we've had that bad run of form at the start of the season this year, and I think it's gonna progress. One thing that I do know about Steven Gerrard is he doesn't take any nonsense. I seen something about him and Michael Beale where they read the heart rate monitors of the players, and if they're not reaching a certain level, then he has conversations with them of, why aren't you working as hard as everybody else? He's just a no-nonsense manager. As much as we feel like he's Steven Gerrard, he's the English hero for everyone in England, he doesn't take any nonsense, and that's what we need. Is we need someone who's strict. I feel like maybe things were a bit too soft at Villa Park, and we let people probably get away with a bit too much. I know our training sessions start at 12 p.m. because there's people who are up all night playing online games. And when you look at something like that, and that's a real thing. Yeah,
really?
That's a real, yeah.
Ah, no.
I won't say any names of players. I won't target anyone. But there's people who are playing computer games till 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And Dean Smith had said that in an interview and said, look, some of the younger players are up late playing, and training at that time just isn't a good idea. So they have training at 12 o'clock.
I'm shocked. Genuinely shocked. I didn't know that. That's,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, true story.
Well, that's the type of stuff that will get you fired, ultimately.
Yeah.
Comment here from For the Love of Paul McGrath podcast on YouTube. Steven Gerrard, Claret and Blue Army. Great stuff, Ty. Great point about the Villa package. Looking forward to the weekend. UTV. The package, just briefly before we go, there's two quick things that I want to ask about. One is Morgan Sanson. Does he exist? Is he a real human being? Is he real? Is he ever going to play football for Villa? Is he any good?
he definitely hasn't had his chance yet at Villa Park. And I think his attitude now with Steven Gerrard coming in will play a huge factor in that. Got a chance for a clean slate. He's had some bad luck with injuries, which, you know, isn't his fault. And then he's had COVID recently as well. So I'd definitely like to see him be given a shot, whether he turns out to be the player that we wanted in terms of what he'll bring to Villa. I don't know. But I'm willing to take that risk. Give him 90 minutes. Give him a few games. Let's see what he's got. Let's see what his game is. Give him a chance. You know, if Steven Gerrard wants to do some business in the middle of the field in January, that's fine. But let's explore the options within the club first and see where you really are short.
The second question was just... I'd love to see him play to see if he's any good or not, because it looked like the reputation was excellent and the track record was excellent and the stats were really good. So maybe he can cut it now. The other thing is just that package. Can you explain to people who are kind of unfamiliar? Villa's youth system is very famous and storied, and it looks like the crop of youngsters coming through are excellent. What's realistic in terms of how many of them actually make it to the first team for Villa, as opposed to, you know, loads of these young kids have come through Villa, got one or two games, and then ended up having great careers for other teams. What's your instinct about what's going on now?
There's a huge buzz around that. And when you invest your time in it and you realise of how much we are investing in it, it's a very exciting prospect. You know, we've got the Chukwuemeka brothers who have come from Northampton. We had a player play in the FA Cup game last night for Stockport, who were 3-2 down in the 85th minute and went on to win it in extra time 5-3. A Villa player come on and change a game. You got Brad Young, who's a huge talent, reminds me of a young Jamie Vardy. You got Louis Barry, who's on loan at Ipswich, again brings he's going to be a great talent. You know, he scored in the FA Cup against Liverpool when that COVID bout happened and we had no players and we had to play the young ones in the FA Cup. You know, he's going to be a great player too. There's just a real good feel good factor around that element. Is we're investing in the younger players and we're showing that we have the best facilities and the best youth players in English football. And that's what it's all about, is we're not just planning for now, we're planning for the future as well. And you can see that that's the owner's plans as well, is that they just want to make Aston Villa as a whole, you know, they want to maybe relive some of the moments that we've had in history. But whether all of the players will not make it, who knows? But there's definitely something there that are pushing. You know, you've got Jadon Philogene-Badase, who's pushing through now. You've also got Carney Chukwuemeka. He's also pushing through. You've got Kane Kessler-Hayden. I think you'll see a few appearances from him in a few cup runs next year. There's just a lot to look forward to in terms of the youth prospects.
And if Steven Gerrard can get that right, then he will be a success. And look, ultimately, if he's going to get the Liverpool job, it's because he's done a really good job at Villa. And that's the way I think that we need to look at this as Villa fans. Ty, I've got to say, if Stevie G's debut is anywhere near as good as yours, it's going to be great. Thanks a million for joining us. Cheers.
Thanks for having us. Cheers, guys.
It's Ty Bracey there. You should check out his podcast if you're a Villa fan. It's called Villa Spaces, and you can follow him on Twitter. He could be one of the big Villa accounts. So OTBM live with Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. I'm excited now. I've changed my mind.
About your moustache or about Aston Villa?
I mean, both, obviously. They're kind of similar levels of importance.
Just for like any radio listeners, Joe was like kind of like massaging his facial hair while saying I'm excited now. So that's why I was a little bit confused. Why not be excited?
It's true. Your alternative in life is to be excited or not.
No, yeah, like I know I
tried. As it's half empty, you're slowly diminishing. The air is coming out of the bubble. We're all dying. Yeah. The world is hurtling towards an inglorious fire. What are we going to do?
Death is a certainty.
Yeah, okay. And we might as well sorry enjoy the last few moments.
I'm sorry for puncturing your happiness there by suggesting that Aston Villa might be in a relegation battle, but the tables don't lie at the moment. And I think there is enough. Like, it's going to be a very, very fun end to this season, I suspect, in terms of this relegation battle.
There's a possibility he's not a good manager. There's a possibility he's just rubbish. Like, again, the range of outcomes here is massive.
Like himself, Ranieri, how there could be a nice little sort of clown car race at the end of the season there. Like, like, I mean, all three could stay up and everything would be fine, but
There's just I like the look of this relegation battle this season, and like, I mean, Leeds just being sucked in there. I think Brentford could get sucked in eventually as well. I know that they've had a couple of bad results, and maybe they've underperformed a little bit results wise, and maybe they'll shoot back up. But I think I'm liking the look at the bottom of the table right now, and I think Villa could be in that mix.
I think you're right about Brentford. I think that there's we're blah blah blahing them into, I don't know, they're safe now because they played well, but that's what happens with these teams sometimes. So
yeah, in fairness, I do think that their results, maybe the last couple of weeks, they'll have been like, I mean, the Norwich result was like a bit of a calamity for them. They had far more of the ball, a lot more shots than them, and maybe it was a bit of an aberration. And then they got out footballed by Burnley, which is never a good thing. Burnley were full value for that win, really.
Dora the Explorer on YouTube says, 100% agree with Rog. We nearly lost the run of ourselves after Japan backslapping ourselves, calling it outstanding. Beating the All Blacks was brilliant, but it's a good sign and much work ahead. How much of a puncture will it be if Argentina beat us this weekend?
It will be a puncture, because I think that you got to keep this momentum rolling a little bit, and if you're going to read into an autumn fixture against New Zealand, then you got to read into an autumn fixture against Argentina. Just like, had they been beaten by Japan or had the performance been sluggish against Japan, there would have been natural questions. Like, an overreaction culture, it does focus on the negatives as well as the positives. So if there's any fear out there that there has been an overreaction positively to Ireland beating the All Blacks, and you can be sure there will be just as much of a reaction coming back should Ireland disappoint against Argentina on Sunday. So yes, I think that it will puncture things.
Is it actually a good kick at the hole for us all?
For us all as sports fans,
do we deserve that or not?
Yeah, as fans, we do. We definitely like.
What if we actually hammer them and we're brilliant, and it's like this is the birth of a new era?
Then, as Irish rugby fans, you probably need to realise that karma is coming for you at some point or another.
All right, okay. Here's what's coming up on OTB Sports Radio today. At 1 o'clock, OTB Gold is Manu Petit. The Koi Gig Pod at 3 o'clock. Our retro panel is on leadership at 4 o'clock. OTB Gold is Inside Pádraig Harrington's Gaff, and live tonight from 7, Nathan and John Giles looking back on last week's football. If you want to hear that, make sure you tune into OTB Sports Radio across the day. Now, up next, Phil Egan is talking Premier League, and we've got the very latest ahead of the College Football Classic as well. OTB AM. Yeah, 18 minutes past 9 this morning. You'll have heard Pádraig O'Kane and John Anthony there with Owen talking about the College Football Classic, the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Be the first to get tickets to see Northwestern Wildcats versus Nebraska Huskers at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday the 27th of August 2022 through the official game pre-sale today. You can sign up to the Club Gridiron mailing list on otbsports.com/Club Gridiron, and that's a good Christmas present for anybody who's an American football fan in your family. Looking forward to that game.
Yeah. Next summer, and then obviously there is the Notre Dame game. Then the year after that, I suspect there's going to be a good few of the Nebraska contingent over here next summer for that. It looks like an unbelievable place. Obviously, the video we played, you came from Northwestern. We got to see that up close and personal. They're going to bring a huge amount of people. Everybody I was chatting to in the tailgate seems pretty excited to come on over. I just hope they all stick to their word. You know, they may have been a few cans of Four Loko deep, but they said they were going to come to Ireland for the game. So every single person in that video that I...
And they'll all be staying with you.
Yep, there is. I've got two couches. So first people in.
Two couchy in, eh?
I mean,
right,
I've got...
About your wealth again.
I've got many leather-bound books. I also have two sofas.
Right. Phil Egan, I don't know if you can follow that, but welcome.
It's nice to know that there's always the option there, Owen.
One is bigger than the other.
The Premier League is back, right? And it seems like people are kind of sleeping a little bit on this for the last 24 or 48 hours, because the international football window was good and took over, despite what Michael Owen says, and took over everybody's thoughts. But luckily, Man United reminded us that all is well. The five-a-sides are competitive and good, and there's young kids coming up and they're happy to at least stand beside, if not kick, established team members of the first team squad who aren't good enough to play international football anymore. So all is well at Manchester United, right?
Yeah, and that's where United are at, that they have their first team players available in training because their form has been so bad, they've been left out of their international teams. So it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, the international break, it's pressed pause on the Premier League, but you're going to realise quick enough on Saturday afternoon how quickly things can just slip back into the pandemonium, because United obviously are always one bad result away from a disaster. Obviously, Chelsea are the first up on Saturday at 12:30 against Leicester. Then you've got the Liverpool-Arsenal game. You also throw in Steven Gerrard's first game as Villa manager. Dean Smith gets Norwich up and running again, plays the team that actually got him the sack as Villa manager. And then Conte has his first Premier League home game as Spurs manager on Sunday. City in action on Sunday as well. I kind of expect City now to put the foot down. So, yeah, it's the games are going to come thick and fast, obviously. And I think one thing that we're going to see over the weekend is just how things can move so quickly, whether it's another managerial casualty who's on the brink. There's only 11 games gone. It seems like a lot longer in terms of there's been so much. But it's very hard to tell, even this early in the season, who's the real deal. I'm kind of looking at that Liverpool-Arsenal game to see how good are Arsenal. Obviously, didn't start the season very well, but had a few injuries. Had a
6 points off the top.
Yeah, and you know, not conceding goals. Aaron Ramsdale's been a revelation. A guy that was written off before he even signed for Arsenal.
Yeah, it was a joke signing, according to some people.
30 million for a guy that's not even going to be your first choice goalkeeper. Well, he's the first choice goalkeeper now. He's played for England. That save against Leicester is absolutely unbelievable. I know we were looking back at Gavin Bazunu's save against Luxembourg, but Ramsdale's is incredible as well. So this will be a really good test for them, because they've struggled at Anfield in the last, especially since Klopp has taken over at Liverpool.
They've got smashed at Anfield every
they
time.
Have and what tends to happen is they get pinned in and they just can't get out. So one thing Liverpool have shown this season, though, is they're not as watertight in midfield where there's gaps. So Arsenal could get chances, but it could be an absolute cracker. It's because it's a 5:30 game as well under the lights. That'll certainly add to it. And Liverpool will be hurting because they lost. They lost to West Ham before the international break. So they need to bounce back as well. And they've a few injury doubts after the international break. Andy Robertson looks like Henderson and Mane play, but they still are light in midfield. So that'll be one to watch. But Chelsea can go 6 points clear if they win that game against Leicester. And Leicester haven't been as good, but we know when they're good that they can cause anyone trouble. So
Leicester are 12th. We're still talking about the next Manchester United manager, and Brendan Rodgers is right there, and the job that he's done at Leicester has been so spectacular. He managed to take over a difficult scenario, win trophy, and continuously get them into European football, if not quite the Champions League. But this season they're actually genuinely struggling to reach the same levels that they were at.
Yeah, they've been conceding too many goals. And Johnny Evans is back in now, but he was out injured for a while. And they obviously brought in Vestergaard from Southampton, who a lot of teams were looking at him for a while. But then as the games went on with Southampton, you could see that he does make quite a few errors. I wasn't impressed with him either at the Euros for Denmark. I thought, even thinking back to that semi-final against England, he was definitely the weak link in that Danish defence, and I think England targeted him. So he's actually been taken out of the team. Johnny Evans is back in, and they look a bit more solid. But saying that, they lost to Arsenal a few weeks ago. A game, as I said, Ramsdale doesn't save that, or doesn't save the follow-on. I know, look, he deserves the bit of luck for the follow-up, because the first save was so unbelievable. And there was good footage of him actually talking to Ben Foster after Arsenal beat Watford. You know, Ben Foster obviously brings his GoPro, and you know, he's quite media savvy now, and he interviewed Ramsdale after the game, and they talked about that save, and he said, look, when you pull off that save, you deserve the little bit of luck in the follow-up. So if that had gone in and Leicester equalised and they go on to win, who knows? But yeah, they're not as impressive. I'm not really on board the whole Brendan Rodgers to Manchester United thing, because, look, he's a better manager than Solskjaer and he would do a better job, but I don't think he's the man that's going to bring United back to where they want to be.
Why not?
I just don't think he's at that level. You're talking about the best managers in the Premier League. You're obviously mentioning Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola. Tuchel would be behind them. And then Rodgers would fall in around there somewhere. If you're Manchester United, you want the best. Unfortunately for United, I should include Conte. Conte actually would be in the conversation with the best. United didn't fancy him.
No, it looks like they're genuinely interested in Zidane at the moment. They're trying to turn his head, even though I would love to see Zidane as the manager. of Manchester United, I think that would be an excellent 18-month period in our lives where we get to talk about, is Zidane getting sacked this week? Is it? They really made a bad decision here where they've gone for like another high-profile player whose tactical approach seems to be to let the players decide what's going to happen. And that worked when he was at Real Madrid because he had some of the best players in the world in their pomp. But right now, it doesn't seem to be working for whatever reason. Mm. Look, my counterpoint to that about the Rodgers thing is there's not that much difference between the playing staff at the respective squads and the money that Rodgers would get if he was given it. He could impact by making changes to the point where they become a team that has a style of play that delivers results. So they're going to beat all the bad teams more often than not because of the difference in quality of player that they can afford. And then it comes down to whether or not he's happy enough to play on the break against Man City, Liverpool and Chelsea, and he probably would be, you know.
Let's see what they did in the FA Cup final last year.
But there's a word you mentioned there, Ger, Liverpool. Brendan Rodgers used to manage Liverpool. I think we could say, oh, it's 2021, these things don't matter. They do. I'd be interested to hear the views of United fans. What do they think?
Well,
do they want to
form? They're so broken now. They're so beaten. They're so unsure of themselves that it's like, well, I could talk myself into Brendan Rodgers if I had to.
But they shouldn't have to do that, though. That's my point. That United should be aiming higher. I think Brendan Rodgers has done a really good job at Leicester, and as I said, I think he would improve Manchester United, but not to the level that they require. But when I say that they require, the owners haven't shown that they require that because they seem to be quite happy to let this Solskjaer thing play out, whereas it should have been ended a long time ago. But they do give money to the managers, but then there was Conte right there,
right
under
there.
Their noses.
Right there.
Like, he would ruffle feathers, but that's exactly what they need from the top to the playing staff, to the coaching staff, everything. And they've just let him sail on by. And look, I don't know how far he can bring Tottenham in terms of being a title challenger. It seems unlikely. He'll certainly improve them. But he was just, I thought he was perfect for United.
Yeah, like the thing is there a sense that when you're looking at the best available managers then this summer that you have Conte, you have Pep and you have Klopp out of work. So like, take the three of them out of the equation then. Like, is Rodgers not necessarily one of the best managers in the continent then at that point once you take those three out?
Like, you're looking at Roberto Martinez all of a sudden going, I mean, really, is that going to be, am I getting into bed with Roberto Martinez? I'm not sure. He's just Brendan Rodgers with a Spanish accent.
Like, because it's that ranking of managers has differed quite a lot now in the last couple of years. Like, Jose has left the building on that front. Like, and
anyone that hires Jose deserves all the failures that they're going to get.
So, like, what you're getting, I suppose, like, and I guess this supports your point, you know what you're getting with Brendan Rodgers. You know you're getting maybe a top 10 manager, like, in Europe, one of Europe's top 10 managers potentially, or you can get someone who will potentially break into that top three or break into the top four as one of the top managers in the world, which is probably what is exciting a lot of Manchester United fans about Ten Hag. Not necessarily with what he's done so far, but because they see potential in him and what he's done as like, okay, this guy could become one of the great managers.
Yeah, and look, he's done a really good job at Ajax, and you think of some of the players that they've lost and they look even stronger this season in the Champions League, and you wonder, like, obviously Tottenham were interested in him, but he signed a new contract with Ajax. You wonder how long it would take for him to implement his ideas at Manchester United, because Ajax don't lose many games. United, obviously, over the last few seasons have lost more than they should be losing. Now, obviously, they finished second last season, but they were never really in the title challenge, even though they were top early January. But no one genuinely believed that they could win the league. If Ten Hag comes in and they have a few bad results, then like, patience runs thin very quickly. That's just the pressure of the job.
It does, although they do have a track record of backing managers over a long period of time since Ferguson. They've given everybody, it seems like, more time. Maybe you could make a slight argument about Moyes. If Moyes had been given the opportunity to clear out the players quicker, who, I don't know. I mean, he did.
Yeah, I think a problem Moyes had, though, is he just didn't talk the right game. And I know, like, it's only words, but they can be... you have to have the right noises coming out of what you say. And
he lacked the self-confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually really refreshing to hear him now as the West Ham manager talking about, yeah, we can finish in the Champions League places, because that's where I thought he really let himself down as United manager. The reason he got the job was because Ferguson thought he was good enough to do it. So, you know,
something happened.
Believe in yourself.
Something did happen between him getting the job and actually taking the job and getting in there and just being overwhelmed by, ooh, you know, that's Rooney and Rio and that group. And he couldn't just quite manage those
first
characters.
Impressions as well are so key. And it sounds like he just didn't make the right impression with them from the start.
I didn't think Carlo Ancelotti was that good at Everton, right? He had a good run at the start of the season, and he's a goal scorer who was scoring goals, but actually at the end his results weren't great. Would Carlo Ancelotti be the perfect Man United manager? Is that what we're talking about here, that there's just a weird super club thing where you've got to be able to talk crap to the board, make sure that the director of personnel is doing what you want to do, make sure that the superstar players are actually putting in at least a minimum of 70% effort all the time? Is that what they're like? Because I'd rather Brendan Rodgers than Ancelotti at this point.
No, I would agree with you there, because Everton, pretty much the second half of last season, were awful to watch. And
he might already have had an eye on another job. Who knows?
Yeah.
But like, I guess my point is, so if Ten Hag is going to be under too much pressure because we've yet to see what he does at a genuine super club, like, at least Brendan Rodgers knows the pressure of Liverpool. The candidate list is really, really small for these gigs, and that's probably why you end up with a figure like Solskjaer being this kind of compromise figure who's going to bring the fans together, who's going to help the commercial side of the business, who's going to do what the board tell him to do, who's going to pretty much acquiesce to the star players, and who will deliver you a top four and semi-final, roughly. And that's enough.
Are United looking at this in a sort of in a kind of a twee way, where they think the Manchester United manager should be a manager for life, where you've got Alex Ferguson who comes in and presides over the club for a long period of time? I wonder, was that part of like the appeal of David Moyes, where they were like, this guy was at Everton for 11 years, whereas David Moyes was like used to his long term relationship, and then he couldn't handle the cut and thrust of the modern managerial relationship statuses, which is loose and fast and going in for 2 or 3 years and getting out of there, Conte style or even Pep Guardiola style. And I wonder if Manchester United are also attached to that a little bit, where they're like, no, Solskjaer is our guy for life until things get sold out.
Managers, like, that just doesn't exist anymore. You mentioned Guardiola. Like, Guardiola and Klopp are seen as long-term managers at the moment, even though Klopp's only at Liverpool 6 years. But it seems like an eternity, because
it is, in football terms now.
Absolutely. And, you know, he's obviously got a few more years left in his contract at Liverpool. But it's very hard to get the
it's
top
impossible.
Manager.
It is impossible, because it's such a weird combination of skills that you need.
Yeah. I find it hard to picture Brendan Rodgers in the dugout at Old Trafford.
Well, maybe
in the home dugout.
We could be months away from it now at this stage.
Well, look,
or less.
United are gonna win away to Watford on Saturday and everything will be grand again. Cavani's already issued the rally cry this week, saying, you know, you gotta have a bit of faith and we'll turn it around. And Watford is a nice game. United's best performances tend to be away from home.
Yeah, that's perfect for them.
It's good for them to get out of Old Trafford.
As we know, they were happy at their five-a-side this week, and there's loads of young kids coming through who are superstars in the making. All as well. I don't know what we're even talking about this for. Very quickly, we're totally out of time, but Eddie Howe, success or failure?
What is success? Success this season is keeping them up.
Is he going to do that?
I think he probably will. I think Brentford's a nice game for them as well. Brentford have kind of gone off the boil a little bit. Raya, the goalkeeper, has been injured and they've lost a few games. Now, they're going to have to work hard to win games, Brentford. They will always give you a good test with the front two that they have and their direct style. But I think St James's Park will be a happier place now that they have a manager. They seem to have a plan for what they're doing this season. And surely they get in a few players in January and they should be okay. But I don't say that with great confidence, though. I'm kind of almost like 50-50.
Yeah, very interesting to see who will sign for them, which clubs will do business with them, and how they can...
The Newcastle tax.
Exactly. How much is that going to be worth? So let's wait and see. And look, maybe Eddie Howe knows intimately the best places to get players, and his recruitment is going to be far superior...
Play Jeff Hendrick.
...than it was when he was signing...
Build a team around Jeff Hendrick.
Jordan Ibe. Didn't he sign Jordan Ibe?
he would have done, I suppose, because he played for Bournemouth in the Premier League and
that was their manager
in the Premier League the entire thing.
Right, Roy McIlroy has dropped a shot and is now only 5 under through 9, which is good enough for a share of the lead. He had the outright lead on 6 under through 8, but he's 5 under through 9, and looks like he is doing pretty well at the moment. Oh, 6 under through 10. Fucking, that's my Roy McIlroy.
Apologies there for some fruity language.
Very unparliamentary. Sorry. 9:36 this morning. OTBAM live with Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. Feel good stuff. Thanks very much for that. Tomorrow, we have Adrian and Owen live with Friday's OTBAM. Brian Fenton, Alan Quinlan, a crappy quiz, and much more besides. The radio tab on OTB Sports app is the best place to listen. And if you hit subscribe and Off the Ball YouTube channel, you can watch us every day. Be sure to turn on notifications on both, and you'll never miss it when we go live. Do I have time for two more comments from the show? Did I lose it? No, here it is here. Right, I'm going back right to the start of this. Dara C, FYI, I won't be up early tomorrow morning, but already know it'll be no Gilroy, no party tomorrow morning.
It's true. We might get you in for the quiz.
Dara C says, a rudderless ship on a Friday, but still love the show, fellas.
He's not wrong.
Come on, Dara.
He's not wrong. But I mean, we like life without the rudders.
There you go. Big blue one for you. Thanks for that. I needed that. Right now, we're bringing you a piece with Kenyan athlete Joan Chelimo. If you miss any of it, the full podcast is available in the OTB Highlights feed. And I've just checked, if you're using iOS, you can download, you can do it on Wi-Fi. You can set it up on the sports app to download only when you're in Wi-Fi. The streaming isn't working, but the downloading is. It takes ages, but we appreciate the effort that you're going to listen to our content, and we really appreciate that.
OTB AM with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
A new year is full of surprises, but one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services. So when postage goes up, your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com is like your own personal post office, wherever you are. You can even take care of orders on the go with the mobile app. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Schedule package pickups, automatically find the cheapest and fastest shipping options, and seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. There's even a supply store where you can stock up on mailing supplies, labels, even printers. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. All you need is a computer or phone and printer. Take a chunk out of your mailing and shipping costs this year with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com code PROGRAM.